Thought Bubble Audio.
Look, up in the sky!
You will never find the more wretched hive of scum and villainy.
Welcome to Beer with Geeks with Tim and Frank.
Who are you?
I'm Batman.
I am Iron Man.
Your friendly neighborhood Spider-Man.
Hi, Christopher. I'm Nero.
My name is Inigo Montoya.
You're a wizard, Harry.
A couple of guys with a couple of beers and a whole lot of pop culture nostalgia.
Make it so, number one.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Beatles.
Name the dog in the ant.
Life finds a way.
I am serious. And don't call me Shirley.
Now sit back and crack open a cold one. Because it's time for Beer with Geeks.
It comes in pints?
Shaken, not stirred.
Great Scott!
I was way off. I knew it started with an S, though.
Hi, and welcome to Beer with Geeks, where two geeks geek out with beer. I'm Tim, and with me, as always, is my man who's got puffy lips, Frank. How are you today?
Hey, I'm a little bit buzzed. How are you?
I'm also a little bit buzzed, so we're doing just fine.
Yeah, just fine.
Frank, it's a very important day in the history of Beer with Geeks and our friendship. Do you know what day it is?
What day is it?
It's hump day, Frank.
Hey!
Actually, it's hump day. It is Wednesday.
That is true.
But it is also our six-year anniversary? Five-year
Five.
Anniversary. Five-year Five. Anniversary.
Hold your horses. Let's not get ahead of ourselves
okay,
here.
Sorry.
Hold
sorry.
Your camels. Let's not get ahead of ourselves
okay,
here.
Okay, good.
With the humps.
Whoa there, girl.
Five okay. years. Five. We have been casting these pods for five solid years.
Almost nonstop, Frank. I would like to point out that there is there's almost never a break in the amount of episodes that we have. Even if we bulk them up, you know, like we'll record two or three at a time, there's almost never a week without a new Beer with Geeks.
That is true. It's very rare that we do a rerun, that we have any kind of gap in service. Yeah. And it all started because you were going to China, and before you left for your trip to China, you were like, let's start a podcast.
Oh my God. That's so true. Frank, I have a connection from today that makes this event even better. So today I went to a museum near your home.
That's correct.
And in that museum, they have a house that was lived in by eight generations of a Chinese family. And that family made a contract with this museum that their house would be rebuilt and replicated inside the museum. It's a permanent exhibit. So I went, quote unquote, went to China today and came back, and now we're recording
that
our
is
anniversary
true.
Episode.
Wow. How perfect is that? That is so true. Wow.
That was not planned at all. I'm so happy that that happened.
That is so perfect and meaningful. But yeah, that's crazy. Yeah, you were going to China and you were like, hey, when I come back, let's start a podcast. Let's start thinking of episode topics. And then when I come back, we can start planning it. And we did that. And that was 5 years ago. And that's crazy. Mm-hmm. I had just moved to Boston and just like a few months earlier. And yeah.
God, so much has transpired in that time.
We've both gotten married
both
since then.
We both got married since then.
We both moved since then.
Yep.
More than once. Yeah. Crazy.
Wow, that is crazy. Yeah, more than once. Yeah. Man. Wow, you know, maybe we should do a Patreon episode where we actually talk about our personal lives and be like, all the things that happened.
I'd be down to do that. I would. Yeah. To sort of like trace the last 5 years of like what we've done in the last 5 years.
Wow.
Maybe we'll do that for Patreon listeners. But wow. Yeah. Well, we're not drinking beer tonight.
No, we are not.
This is a special occasion. Mm-hmm. We are together in person.
That's right.
This is a special occasion, so we are not drinking beer. We have, to celebrate, we've taken it up a notch, and we are drinking our favorite spirits.
Mm-hmm. That's right. I am drinking gin, my
yes.
personal favorite spirit. I know many of you think it tastes like gasoline. It doesn't.
It's
Shut
delicious.
Up. I am drinking the original Dover Straight gin. It is a premium American gin, and it is quite delicious. I won't say that it's the best gin that I've ever had. I will be honest. You got me a gin for my bachelor party that I think might actually be the best gin I've ever tasted.
Really? Straight Path gin.
Oh, Straight Path gin. It's so good.
It's very good. I won't disagree with that.
It's like the difference between going to a Christmas tree farm and then chopping down a pine tree in the forest on your own.
Oh, okay. 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 All right. I gotcha.
That only makes sense for gin drinkers because many people say it tastes like pine.
It tastes like Christmas tree.
It tastes like Christmas
tree. It does.
What are you drinking over
I
there?
I am drinking Jim Beam Kentucky Straight Bourbon. And that is my spirit of choice.
So in the realm of whiskey, scotch, and bourbon, bourbon's your go-to.
You know, I have vacillated on this a bit. I really enjoy...
That is such a good word. Vacillated?
Thank you. You're an English teacher. That means a lot coming from you.
Yeah.
I have gone back and forth. I vacillated because there was a time when I thought I was a scotch drinker, and I still enjoy a very good scotch. We had an amazing Lagavulin scotch at my bachelor party, the night before my wedding.
I remember.
Right?
It was excellent.
That was fantastic. That was like top shelf stuff. Great. But I have come around on bourbon lately. Bourbon has been sort of my whiskey of choice. So I've always been in the whiskey camp, right? And there's like a spectrum of whiskey where you go from the bourbon to the scotch. And that I have gone back and forth on what's my favorite. Currently, I'm in a bourbon mood. Lately, I've been going through a big bourbon phase.
Now, for those who are, because we talk about beer mostly on this show, what's the big difference between a scotch and a bourbon?
Well, the big thing about bourbon is that for bourbon to be called a bourbon, it needs to be distilled in the United States. It needs to be at least 50% corn.
Really?
Yes. Yes.
Really?
Yep. It needs to be at least 50% corn.
I'm learning so much.
Okay. Here you go. So yes, that's sort of the main thing. Now people often will make the mistake of thinking, oh, I thought it needed to be distilled in Kentucky. No, Kentucky wants you to think that, but no, it needs to be distilled in the United States. So similar to sort of a champagne thing, where it's only champagne if it's from the Champagne region of France. Bourbon is only bourbon if it is distilled in the United States, and if it is also 50%, at least 50% corn. So those are the criteria. 51% corn. So that's the story of bourbon. So that's what makes bourbon. And it needs to be in a charred oak barrel, aged in a charred oak barrel. So you can find, this might be a surprise to you too, maybe you know this, you can find clear whiskey.
I actually did not know that.
There is clear whiskey, because if it is not, what gives whiskey or bourbon or scotch its golden color is the charred oak barrels that it's aged in. The char from the wood seeps into the whiskey, into the liquid, and gives it that brownish golden color.
Wow, I love that.
But you can, when whiskey is distilled and poured straight or is aged in, say, a steel cask instead of in oak barrel, it will be clear.
Wow.
There is a distillery here in Massachusetts called Bully Boy that sells a clear whiskey that is delicious, but it's not bourbon because it's not in an oak barrel.
Sure.
So that's what I know about bourbon. So lately, I've been on a bourbon kick when it comes to my whiskeys, and right now Jim Beam is doing the trick for me, and I'm enjoying it quite a bit. So we have both had a little bit to drink already tonight, and thank you for the lasers, and we both have the bottles next to us. I'll probably put a photo in the show notes or maybe even on the cover art of us with our bottles of spirits. So we've had a bit to drink, and we're going to keep drinking as we go through. So this is our 5-year anniversary.
That's right.
And speaking of anniversaries, this year, the year of our Lord, 2019.
I wish we still wrote things like that.
We really should.
Our Lord. It's so great.
The year of our Lord, 2019, is the 30th anniversary of not only my birth, but one of the greatest superhero films of all time, and that is Batman. Batman 89, the Michael Keaton original. It has turned 30 this year, and to celebrate it, yeah, you're looking at the runtime, you're like, why is there a 2-hour Beer with Geeks? Well, my friends,
the commentaries are back.
Commentaries!
By popular demand / nobody asked for them, the commentaries are back.
/it's our anniversary, and we damn well felt like it.
And it's the 30th anniversary of Batman. It's our 5-year anniversary of Beer with Geeks. And this is one of my all-time favorite films And so not just because it's a Batman film, but because it's a Tim Burton film, and it is so beautiful.
It's such a good movie.
And the best part about these commentaries is that we watch them without the sound, and so we're really going to experience the treat that is Batman 89 just as a visual spectacle.
That's right.
Even though I could recite this movie like verbatim. But Frank, without further ado, there's actually like a large opening credit sequence to this film. So
yes.
Why don't we get started?
Yes.
We can talk,
over that. Yes. Mm-hmm. So we're watching it off of Amazon Prime, but it's the same copy that is available digitally anywhere here in 2019. Anywhere you can get it digitally, you're watching the same version with us. It's on DC Universe. It's on a bunch of different services to buy, to rent, whatever. So
potentially
so,
on the HBO Max service that just got announced.
Maybe.
Yeah, maybe, probably. They said that DC Entertainment was going to be part of it.
So there you go. I mean, it's all under Warner Brothers umbrella, so that might be. So it's the same version. I mean, it shouldn't have changed much. It's not like Star Wars where there's different cuts and stuff. So it should be the same version of basically however you're watching it. We are going to do the typical, you know, 3-2-1 hit play type of thing. I'm queuing it up, and I'm gonna pause it at zero. So we are at zero right now. Actually, before we get started, I'm just going to turn on the closed captions real quick. There we go. They're on. Just so we, for our benefit. So I am at zero, and I'm going to count down 3-2-1 and then hit play. So 3-2-1 play. All right. So if you're trying to watch along, that's the cue. If you're just listening along, God bless you. All right. So 3-2-1 play. 1-2. All right. We are off and running. We got the Warner Brothers logo. And Tim with the helpful music that's faded away. So, do you remember the first time you saw this movie?
I actually don't remember the first time I saw this. I was a small child. I was alive, but certainly not old enough.
Oh, so you were alive when you saw it?
I was alive when I saw it.
Wow, not everyone can say that.
I know. And I was not old enough to see it in theaters. I was old enough to see Batman Returns in theaters, but I wasn't allowed to. My aunt saw it, and she said it was too violent for the likes of small children. And to which, as an adult, an adult in their 30s, I would agree.
I'd second that, yeah.
The main plot of that film was about the Penguin murdering babies, so...
Yeah. Yeah, not cool.
Yes, I understand that it was, but I mean, as like a 5 or 6 year old, I probably wouldn't have gotten it.
Yeah.
So it was just about Batman being on screen. But I watched this tons. We used to rent it on tape at Blockbuster and whatever else over and over and over again. And so actually watching it without the opening commercials is very strange for me.
Yes.
Yeah, because there was the Diet Coke commercial where Alfred, played by Michael Goff, was like,
I have seen
like,
that commercial.
Oh, a must away, and he's on his way. And it was just cut. It would just cut to scenes of the Batmobile driving, which were taken right from the film. And they were like, oh, he's on his way, blah, blah, blah. And then the Coke can had a little cape at the end of it that flapped
yes,
in the wind.
I have seen that commercial on YouTube.
Yeah.
I admittedly don't. So I was, by the way, this is worth saying. As is the usual with our commentaries, unlimited lookups.
Oh yeah, I guess that is the rule. I guess we never really established it, but it is unlimited lookups.
Yeah, we don't stick to one lookup because that's BS for these things. But when this movie came out, let's see, it came out in June of 1989. So
do you remember the date of June of 1989? Because it is June right
June
now.
June 19th, 1989. No, it's July.
Although, oh, July. Sorry,
I'm sorry. No, it's totally August. It's totally August because look at the calendar. Tim, totally, it's August.
But it is July.
It's July.
There's that bat symbol. Oh, yeah.
June 19th, 1989. Oh, June 23rd in the United States. It was June 19th in California.
Hold on. 1 second. We're just going to.
Here we go.
We're going to do a snare.
Here we go. That is the most beautiful shot of Gotham I've ever seen.
It's beautiful. What a beautiful matte painting that is.
My cat, Bruce, is sitting here. I named him after Batman.
Yep, that's right.
He's a black cat.
I took a picture of it.
Yep.
Yep.
He's hanging here next to us.
So this is all a set, Frank, but it's one of the largest sets ever built for a film at this time. And that includes things like the Ten Commandments and Cleopatra and really, really, really.
That's saying a lot for, you know, considering like the golden age of Hollywood really did have so many epic scale sets.
Actually, well, Frank, that's a common misconception. The golden age of Hollywood actually ended in 1945. Golden Age of Hollywood is from 1929 to 1945.
God.
You see, Frank, I have
the host of Academy Rewind over here.
I have a master's. I have a master's in film studies, so I'm gonna let. But anyway,
for God's sake, Harold. God's sake, Timothy.
Sorry. But they actually had to. They shot this in London, and they had to. They built onto the theater.
Can I ask a
just
question?
To fit the film? Yes.
Did they shoot this at Elstree/Pinewood?
Yeah, Pinewood. Yeah, this is a Pinewood film. I know, and I like that the film makes you think that this is Thomas and Martha Wayne with their son Bruce.
It's a great misdirect.
It is a really great misdirect because
Tim Burton.
Tim Burton's a master, and this is only like his third or fourth film. It's Pee-wee's and Beetlejuice, and then
God,
Batman.
I forget about Pee-wee.
Yeah, Pee-wee was his first big
man.
One.
I forget about Pee-wee.
Yeah,
being his, I mean, not I don't forget about Pee-wee as a person.
Yeah, but it's his. Yeah,
but I forget that it's Tim Burton. Yeah, as they pour my second bourbon.
Yeah, right.
Well, exactly. Second that you guys know of.
Exactly, man. He went down like crazy. He just gets hit in the back of the. He's not even hit in the neck. He's hit in the shoulder.
Oh yeah, no, that was not fun.
Yeah, no, that's gotta hurt. But
yeah,
still,
that's gotta hurt.
Yeah, man. But this is some nice rotoscoping up here because it's just a matte shot.
It's a beautiful. Oh, and there he goes.
And they rotoscoped the crap out of
and
this.
And they did
movie.
It a good shot. And it kind of holds up too. Like you can kind of see the matte lines, but yeah, it still holds up.
But mostly, I think that's the beauty of this film. Is that because it is set driven and mostly practical effects, most of it does kind of hold up.
Yeah.
The action is still pretty good because you don't see any like, oh no, that's obviously a CG figure because this is before Jurassic Park. It's 1989. So it's a film that ages well because it sits in this weird world of fedoras and flash bulbs but also like blocky square cars from the 80s.
Yeah,
and
it's sort of a period piece. Like it kind of looks like it's out of the 40s, yeah. Which I'm sure is intentional.
It was all over the pavement.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, look at him come
and
down.
A little bit of a Dutch angle, just a little bit.
Just a slight Dutch angle.
It's just
yeah.
like a 15 degree angle.
A 15 degree Dutch angle. He's slightly Dutch. Yeah. Yeah. So I cut you off like 5 minutes ago. What were you saying?
Do you think I remember 5 minutes ago?
No.
I've been drinking enough bourbon. I don't remember what happened 5 minutes ago. Come on.
Point.
Give me a lot of credit, though. That's
I
very
like
kind of you.
This guy's little like bone earring, his little talent earring.
The wingspan on that, man.
It's great. He's got handles on his cape, if you notice.
Is that what it is?
He's got handles, and it's wireframe.
And I like this like fake out where it's like he falls down, and you're like, oh, no.
I remember watching this film with a couple of students because I used this scene because I was teaching a comic book class, so we were going over superhero cinema, and so I used this scene. I don't watch the whole film, but they laughed at when he got shot and fell, but by the end of the scene they were like, wow, that was so good. And it's exactly the emotion you should be feeling.
Yes.
Yeah, like, oh my God, he's down already, but oh no. And he's wearing Nikes.
He's wearing Nikes. I'm not going to kill you.
Yeah, I want you to tell your friends about me. This is I'm Batman.
It's such a great, I'm Batman. Like, it's such a great opening to the film, you know?
Yeah, original script had him say, I am the Knight, but that doesn't establish what his name is. And so they switched to I'm Batman, which is weirdly dumb, but also incredibly iconic
like,
at
way
the same
better.
Time.
It's way,
way better.
Better.
It's way, 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 way better. Oh, man. Really wasted Billy Dee Williams as Harvey Dent.
I mean, if he had gotten the chance to be imagine him as Two-Face. Imagine him as Two-Face. I am so... That is one of the, like, the biggest disappointments I have about this franchise. Because I consider, you know, from here all the way through to the end with Batman and Robin.
No, it's one continuing story.
It's one franchise.
Yeah, I agree. And Batman Forever is supposed to be kind of a soft reboot, but to me, it's all the same.
It's
universe.
Still, you know, Val Kilmer. It's still the same. I know he's different, but it's still the same Batman.
Mayor Borg. It is futile to resist.
Is a Dutch angle again? 15 degree Dutch angle, just slightly Dutch.
Slightly Dutch. That's crazy. It is crazy. Now, so you want to talk waste, though. Billy Dee Williams is Harvey Dent. He's good in this film, but I would have loved to have seen Two-Face, but they went in a different direction, even though Billy Dee Williams got bought out of his contract.
Is that what happened?
Yeah, to not play Two-Face.
That's a shame.
It is a shame. But then Pat Hingle as Commissioner Gordon, like also a shame of not really utilizing your... the actors that are there, but they didn't care about the relationship between Gordon and Batman at this point. Commissioner Gordon was just kind of there.
Do you think that's because Tim Burton was trying to distance himself from Batman 66 as much as he could, and sort of tonally as well as storytelling?
I think so, but I think that there's also how many characters can you serve at one time?
Okay,
kind of thing. And so if he was also really trying to serve Jack Nicholson as Jack Napier and the Joker in this film. And so somebody's got to be cut somewhere along the line. So if you go back and you think they did it in Batman Begins, but the Scarecrow and Ra's al Ghul are not serviced in that film.
Not like Joker is in this movie.
No. The screen time that Jack Nicholson has in this movie might be more than Michael Keaton has.
And it might be. I bet there's someone out there who's done that calculation. Mm-hmm. And it's Jack Nicholson. Of course, right? Of course. Also, we're watching this movie in 4K, and it is beautiful in 4K.
The texture on the wall behind them is...
I'd never really paid attention to that. I'm enjoying this movie cinematically more than I ever have.
Look how dusty the, siren is. How dirty and grimy everything is in Gotham. It is just gross.
Look, it's Porkins.
It's Porkins.
Detective Porkins, excuse me.
He's also the FBI agent in Raiders of the Lost Ark.
You know, I feel like we should be smoking cigars right now.
Oh, man. But is that because Eckhart is smoking a cigar?
It is.
You know, I know he's Eckhart, but I want him to be Harvey Bullock. Because he's basically Harvey Bullock. That's this is the character. Harvey Bullock is a corrupt cop who smokes cigars and wears a fedora and a trench coat. And this is this is him right here on screen in front of us. It's Harvey Bullock, but he's Lieutenant Eckhart here.
Right.
Yeah, and I think at this point, Harvey Bullock was in the comics. I think he's an 80s edition, but it doesn't matter. I love Alexander Knox. He's a made-up character, but I love him. They say he can't be killed. They say he drinks blood. I just think that he is just so... He is so fun.
He is a fun character. And why would you throw half a cigar at him? That's not... Hey, that's a waste of a good cigar. Or a cigar. I don't know if it's a good cigar.
A
cigar.
Is he? What's he pulling down after taxes? He's... Oh, you know what they're close to? They're right next... Because this is all a set and everything like that. They're right next to the museum. That's funny because I recognized the ventilators on the outside. The point. I have seen this movie way too many times. Oh, but this is one of my favorite scenes in the film, this confrontation between Napier and Eckhart. It not really for any particular reason that it adds so much to the film. There's something about a bag of money and the way that they talk to one another. Shut up and listen. Harvey Dent's been sniffing around one of our front companies. You know, it's just, it's very 1940s noir, the racket. I was going to say it's from the 20s, so that's not a great example. A little Maltese Falcon or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And George Cukor, Maltese Falcon, I think.
Cukor. That sounds right. Cukor.
Unlimited lookups.
Hey, you know what? Yeah. Fine. You look that up. You know what? I have a humidor. And I have a couple cigars. And in the spirit of Porkins and in the spirit of 30 years of Batman 89, once you're done looking up if it's George Cukor who directed The Maltese Falcon, I may go grab us a cigar or two.
I am 100% on board for that idea. And The Maltese Falcon was directed by John Huston.
John
Huston of The Informant and Stagecoach and Moby Dick fame.
Moby Dick.
And many other things. Did you know that Ray Bradbury wrote the script to Moby Dick?
Are you kidding me?
I know. It was his first movie script. Isn't that crazy?
That's insane.
I know.
You entertain the people and you talk about what's happening here while I get us some cigars.
The businesses will come back here. A lot of people might stay away, man. They're scared. Did you know that Pat Hingle played Benjamin Franklin in the 1776 revival cast with Brent Spiner?
I love that.
As John Adams. I know. It's great. It's great. Alexander Knox, everyone's making fun of him because he believes in a Batman and no one does. What a crazy guy. He's a crazy living guy. what's fun here, the Phenox I Got Something For You is signed by Bob Kane in the Bob Kane signature style, you know, the bat with the, you know, the bat with the fangs and all that. What a dip, whatever. When I was a kid, Hello Legs, never understood that line. Now I watch it and I'm thinking, wow, Alexander Knox, this is such an 80s movie in some ways, because you're just overtly sexualizing somebody that you're going to need. Like, oh, if you want me to pose nude, you're going to need a long lens. Hilarious that he makes fun of himself, but also Coral Maltese and Time Magazine, great reference to The Dark Knight Returns, a movie that Tim Burton wanted to make, and they were like, how about you make a Batman origin movie instead, which works just fine in its own way. Kim Basinger was a pinch hint for this movie, too, because it was supposed to be Sean... Ooh, goodness now. Sean somebody needs somebody to love. And that's... let me see. She was in Ace Ventura. That's where I'm going. Sean Young. But she fell off a horse.
Oh, Sean Young from Blade Runner.
Yeah, there was... Yeah, Blade Runner. Well, I'm glad I went with Ace Ventura. But yes, Blade Runner. Her more arguably more famous part. Also, Ray Finkel is a man, just so you know. Sean Young, there was supposed to be a horseback riding scene with Bruce Wayne and Vicki Vale, but she fell off her horse in practice, and so she had to be replaced with Kim Basinger, which was one of her first roles, which is crazy. Oscar-winning actress Kim Basinger for L.A. Confidential. And then we get Carl Grissom, and what a great aerial shot that was of that miniature. It was just riding up the building, and it's great. It's so good. I love that Jack Napier in the scene is wearing a purple suit, like purple. Like,
yes,
it's not a look that he adopted for the Joker. It's something that he just wore because 1989.
Oh, is that true?
Yeah. Well, I mean, he's wearing a purple suit right now. He's not the Joker yet. Look at him. You can even see the orange piping in it because of the 4K-ness of this look. It's so good.
I'm lighting up my cigar.
I will talk. Oh, Jack Palance, a treasure of American film, really. But this is the first movie I ever saw Jack Palance in. You know, City Slickers I didn't see until much later.
Come to think of it, it probably was my first, too.
Yeah, but Jack, you are my number one guy. That's something that I love to say to people, even though nobody knows what it's from, because it's arguably an obscure reference. I mean, Batman 89 was a very popular film in its day, like extremely popular film in its day. But even, you know, it's not what it was, you know, with the younger generations. And so,
sure. But it was mega, mega hyper popular,
right,
in 1989.
I need someone I can trust. You... I'm a number one guy.
We're so good at our jobs.
I know. We're so good. I know.
Hey, light up. Light up. Enjoy. Celebrate here.
You lucky dick. I'm sorry. I'm busy watching Jack Palance, but I was waiting for you to light up because you got to talk while I light.
Yes.
So you take over.
Well, I'm lit. So let's get lit. I was born in 89, as I alluded to earlier. And so it's easy for me to overlook not the cultural significance, but the cultural phenomenon that was Batman 89, right? Because this is the year that I was born, and it's easy for me to just sort of not realize just how much of an impact this had on the culture. But this was the blockbuster of the year. This was the Avengers Endgame of the year, if you will. It was the number one guy. It was the number one movie at the box office.
I mean, it made a ton of money.
Ton of money. Dude, you look like a badass smoking that cigar. I'm not going to lie.
Do I?
You do. You do. You got the gin in one hand, the cigar in the other. You look good.
Thank you.
Thank you. It's a good look. It's a good look. And cheers to you, buddy. Ooh. Cheers. Holding up my glass and
cheers
my cigar to you.
Cheers to you.
Cheers to 5 years. As these guys are in this casino.
I mean, being of the age that
Alfred,
they are, whenever I smoke a cigar, I think I want to be like, Wesley, find out about that Matt Murdock. Wesley. It's my 2004 Daredevil reference for everybody today.
There you go. You, I didn't see us going there, but you made it. Made the reference. Mm. Yeah, but yes, it is easy for me to sort of casually overlook the cultural significance this movie had within that year.
Absolutely.
Right? because it was a super important, super significant film at the time, and still is. But really, like, throughout that year, it was Batmania. Everything was Batman.
People were shaving bat symbols into their hair, like when they got a haircut.
Literally.
Batmania.
I actually saw a guy who had the bat symbol shaved into his head a couple weeks ago.
Really?
Yeah, for real. For real.
Wow. I love that Alfred's just, like, picking up Bruce's crap.
I know.
Because that's what Alfred does.
That's what he does.
Picking up the pen. Like, Bruce just puts it in a plant. Like, what an idiot. I like Keaton's, like, slightly spacey Bruce Wayne. It's like his, I don't know, because Michael Keaton was like the original fan upset, right? Like, oh my God, how dare you make this comedian, you know, Mr. Mom, Batman, you know, this going bald, wiry haired, 30-something actor, Batman. But Michael Keaton's greatest talent is making us believe that he could actually beat us up and be Batman. And that's what makes him such a tremendously good actor. I mean, he is a tremendously good actor, which makes us believe that. But, you know, he gives us this real spacey Bruce Wayne and this hard-thinking, like, Batcave Bruce Wayne, I guess. Because, you know, there are, you know, I think Christian Bale separated them a little bit better. The party Bruce Wayne versus the real Bruce Wayne and then Batman. But I think that Keaton really gets there with the script that he's given. He gives us the intellectual Bruce Wayne when it's necessary, but he's this real spacey guy when he's not in the Batcave. And it really, really works for him.
I get that.
There's also the scene with Knox and Kim Basinger, or Vicki Vale, when they go through this armor room, and it gives us this Bruce Wayne is a man of the world, and he did travel, and he did work with gurus and martial artists and all this different stuff.
It makes it believable,
Batman, but it never directly references that, which I think is pretty cool. That, like, it, like, for comic fans, you're like, yeah, this guy is a man of war. It says a lot about him.
He's a worldly man.
He's a worldly man, but he also collects armor. Right? And so, but what does Batman wear in this film but armor? He wears the modern version of what we're looking at in this room right now.
Absolutely.
That he is literally a Dark Knight. These are samurai and knights and all of this different stuff. And he is that to Gotham. And we see that in this room. And that's, like, for Anton Furst. I mean, Anton Furst is the writer, the production designer on the
yes.
film.
Yes. One of the great production designers in cinema history.
Indeed.
Yeah.
And this was the second to last film. The Awakening was his last one, and he died pretty tragically right after that. But, you know, he just understood how to capture your eye.
He really did.
Some of this stuff. But, I mean, but, like, all these different, like, armors of the ages, like, tell you so much about Bruce Wayne without the film really telling you, which is really nice about films that you don't really get in 2019.
It's,
you
know, a show don't tell scenario.
Yeah,
right?
And we don't get a lot of show don't tell anymore. It's a lot of tell and tell.
Yes, that's right. That's right. And that's one thing that I must say Tim Burton is very, very good at, is showing, not telling. And sometimes he does both, but he's very good at the showing piece, and he has a really good eye for the visuals that will get the point across and that will, you know, help you to see what it is that he's trying to communicate.
Right. And I think, well, I mean, especially in a comic book medium, I mean, showing is everything. Telling is some of it, but...
Exactly. Yeah. A good comic book, right? Like, because there's, you know, a lot of... There's good, very, very good comics will show and tell.
That's right.
In a film medium, though, I feel like it's more important to show than tell.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. This scene, two notes on this scene. One, I always thought, because I didn't know what grants were when I was a kid, so I always thought it was give Knox a grand. Like, not like Alexander Knox just asked for
$1,000,
but he got it anyway, which is pretty good.
But just,
for more. But he asked for a grant, which is pretty good. But yes, six is good is one of my favorite lines from this film. When everyone's like, is six? Yeah, six is good.
Six is
and
good.
Then you make that little face that Knox makes. Palmer, co-host of Academy Rewind, that is like our go-to quote when everybody says six. Yeah, six is good. And then you make the face.
You make the reference a lot, I feel like. And I'm always like, wait, what are you referencing? I forget.
Yeah, well, I mean, this is an incredibly obscure reference.
As far as Batman 89 references go, that's an obscure one, yes.
Look at all the computer monitors. He's so cool. I like that Batman wears glasses in this universe.
Does that make you feel very seen as a kid where you're like, Batman wears glasses? Cool.
Honestly, I just thought he used them to focus.
Mm.
Like, he's got his focusing glasses on. He's focusing.
He wears them when he's thinking.
He's thinking. Kevin Smith has a great story about watching this movie, and he's like, Michael Keaton's Batman wears glasses, so I don't need glasses, but I'm going to wear fake glasses to be like that. And he ruined his eyes by wearing fake glasses,
so now he needs
real glasses.
Wait a second. Did he tell that story during his Batman 89 commentary on Fat Man on Batman?
I honestly don't remember where it came from, but that sounds viable.
Because I know I listened, because he did a whole series of them, of Batman commentaries.
Yes, he did.
With Mark Bernardin, which then led to Mark Bernardin being the co-host of Fat Man on Batman, which became Fat Man Beyond.
That's right. Yeah, which was your suggestion, I believe.
I don't want to say that it was my direct suggestion that led to them naming the podcast that, but I will say that as far as I can tell from searching Twitter, if you look for, you know, people tweeting at Kevin Smith saying you should name it Fat Man Beyond, I think I'm the first one who said that. So I don't know if I was the one that he saw, but I was the first one who said it. If you look, it's on Twitter.
You know what? That's whatever
records will show.
Whatever claim to fame that you need.
Well, my fame to claim is that I'm the co-host of Beer with Geeks.
Your fame to claim? Frank's drunk. Yes.
Well, I swear to drunk, I'm not God.
I love this chemical plant scene, this Axis Chemical plant.
Axis Chemical.
In the comics, it's Ace Chemicals. I don't know why they changed it. Axis maybe sounds better. I don't know.
You know, to me, I always think of Acme, like from the old like Looney Tunes and stuff, right?
Me too. When I was a kid, I thought it was Acme for the longest time.
And this is a Warner Brothers movie, so like it all fits. But yeah. Oh
yeah,
man.
Not sure. I'm not really sure, but
I don't know why it became Axis, but I like it.
I don't know. There's something about the scene. I just love the incredibly overly industrial. It's almost like Frankenstein's lab.
It's very old school monster movie look. It's very like diabolical. It's like Fleischer Superman cartoons look to it. It's a very like, it's clearly supposed to be contemporary, yet it, you know, it's like as in being 89.
Yeah, but it
but also looks like the 40s.
That's right, because it's like Dick Tracy's showing up, and then
Tracy, great pull, yes.
Yeah, but then Batman shows up. I have that grappling gun, by the way. I have a prop of that grappling gun. Oh, and it doesn't fire, but you know what? That's okay.
That's all right.
Yeah, the way that guy yells, I always thought that it was in his mouth. Because in 4K, obviously, it's on his shoulder, but it's...
No, you know. But I remember the sound. I can't hear it, but I remember the sound you're talking about. I can understand why it sounded like that. Yeah.
Yeah,
dude, this looks beautiful in 4K. So, like, this is my 4K TV that I only got, like less than a year ago. And I have been in love with this TV since I got it. And watching this movie in 4K, if you're not watching this movie right now, first of all, you should be watching it. And if you're not watching it in 4K, I'm sorry, because it looks beautiful in 4K.
I know. You know, I don't have a 4K TV.
Oh, really?
And I know. Surprise, my TV is like 10 years old.
Your TV's big, though, so I thought it was.
It's a 44-inch, like that. Okay. So, actually, the wall that it's on now since I moved can fit a 60-inch.
Yeah.
And that's what I mean. Oh, it's a great scene. It's like smack.
That pow right in the kisser.
There's something about this scene with Jack climbing up the stairs.
Yep.
And Batman being on a different level and like creeping up behind him. I just love this scene so much. It's exactly what I love about Batman, I think. Like effortlessly, which is not an effortlessly word.
Easy for you to say.
Yeah. Taking out guards, and I think, but like slowly creeping towards his destination.
Yes, and towards his destiny.
And I think Lauren and I talked about this on our episode about costumes.
Yep.
That police need to go back to wearing leather coats.
Agreed.
Up, and you can see the handles actually.
Yes, right there when he flies downward. Yes, you can see
the handles on his cape.
Oh, and the revolver.
Yeah, if some of the toys, actually some of the, like the hot toys or whatever else, they actually, the cape that he actually come with the handles, they don't pretend that they're not there, which is pretty cool. Like, he actually has them on his suit.
Form and function. I love that. So Jack Nicholson was 52 when he played this role, or when the movie came out.
Anyway. Really?
52.
That's...
Well, when you think about it, right?
Yeah, so I mean, that's 89, right?
And, like, what? How many years earlier was...
The Shining was 9 years earlier.
Nine years?
9 years.
It was 1980?
1980, yep.
Oh, wow. He looks a lot older than... Never mind. I was going to say, like, yeah, you know. I thought Shining was, like, in the late 70s.
No, he's gained... 1980. Yeah, and he's gained a good chunk of weight since.
Well, I meant more about how like, sort of... Oh, yeah, 1980. You're right. How, like, sort of gray he's gotten. And I don't know. He just... You know what? All right.
Well, Jack Nicholson really didn't want to play this role. This is really well documented. And I'm sure a lot of people listening to this know this fact that... Jack Nicholson was like, nah, I'm not incredibly interested. And they were like, okay, we're going to give it to Robin Williams. And Robin Williams was like, hells yes, give it to me.
Can you imagine what a Robin Williams Joker, how iconic a Robin Williams Joker could have been in 1989?
I think he would have been spectacular. And I mean, I love Jack Nicholson in this film.
Oh, it's absolutely.
It's iconic in its own way and blah, blah, blah.
Oh, it's absolutely iconic, yes.
Yeah, But Robin Williams would have been spectacular. Woo. Because his dramatic stuff was just as good as his comedic stuff.
If Robin Williams had played the Joker in this film, can you... Well, I shouldn't talk over this because this is the origin of the Joker right here.
Yeah, but no, you can talk over it. This is a commentary, Frank. It's
but
all
like,
about talking
if
over
he it. Had, if he had...
Throw the smoke bomb.
Ah,
the
smoke
bomb.
Yes.
The smoke bomb.
Yes.
Yes, it's just
this
so cool.
This is what I'm here for.
Look at that
Who
shot.
Who is this guy?
Look at that shot.
Oh,
that's
my God.
So
it's
good.
We're going to geek out a lot, my friends.
Oh, my God.
We've had a fair
so
bit of
good.
Bourbon and gin.
It's
going to
so
happen.
So good.
I hope you're drinking
and
with us.
And then like two iconic shots back to back with the Axis
sign.
And then.
You know, that Axis shot is one of the most iconic shots for me. That's one of the shots that I think of when I think of this movie.
Really?
Yes.
And then the hand, which is funny because when you're like submerged in a liquid and stuff like that, that's not how you come up. When you run out of breath in the pool, do you stick your hand out first? Absolutely.
If you're
not.
Tim Burton, you do.
That's true. In a Tim Burton universe, that's what you do. I almost swore really bad with what I just said because I've been drinking, but I didn't.
You know what? If you do, like, you do. It's fine. It happens. That's what bleeping
happen.
Is for.
You know, a map of Gotham City. You don't really think about this, but somebody in a prop department had to make a map of Gotham. Like, what would Gotham look like?
I wonder if they based it on a real city and just, like, slapped the name Gotham over it, or if they, like plotted out a fake city.
Maybe. I was watching a movie recently, Alfred Hitchcock, called Foreign Correspondent. Would recommend if nobody's ever seen it. 1940. Really great movie.
Never seen it, actually.
Oh, would recommend. It's great.
Was that an Oscar nom?
Yes, it was. Yeah, no. No, it was not, actually. I take that back. I was watching it for other reasons.
So you're saying you're a liar.
I'm a liar, indeed. Ah, I love this scene. How's the soup?
Soup.
Oh, I love this scene.
It's
Excuse
super.
Me? The soup. How is it? I just... There's something about the scene that encapsulates Bruce Wayne oh so very well. The long table, like the distance that he needs to keep between people.
Yep.
I guess they're eating onion soup. It's hard to tell. He's got to walk the salt down to her.
Like Anakin and Padme.
Oh, yeah. It's just
without
like,
floating fruit.
It's just like pears.
It's just like pears,
it's just
but
like
not.
Floating pears.
Like, who wants to sit that far from their date? Who? What? Are you kidding me?
Well, I feel like Alfred set this up, and Bruce was like,
I don't
okay.
care who set it up. Who wants to sit that far from their date? I don't.
Nobody. Nobody. But I like it.
Holy
Vicky
Spirit
Vail's,
doesn't need that much room.
But I good reference. Catholic school reference. Yeah, I like. Oh, yeah. The way he looks around the room, though. Like,
yeah.
You know, the truth, I don't think I've ever been in this room before, is a line.
That is a line. That is such a good, you want to get out of here? He is
so
This is the
charming.
charmer Bruce Wayne, right? This is Bruce Wayne putting on the Wayne charm, putting on the Playboy charm.
You know, maybe it's all a ruse. See this, like, you know, the steak and pasta thing they have going on.
I think it is. I think that was
Check
all a move.
Check out their old fridge, though.
I know. It's so pretty.
It is really pretty.
It's like a 50. It's like a Leave It to Beaver fridge.
You know, somebody
it's like
an from,
I Love Lucy fridge.
Somebody from that era would be like, what are you, insane? Like, why is that pretty? It's the curvature. Man.
It's true. Yes, that is true. The
it's
curvature.
Nice and round, the big handle.
But again, it's sort of the 50s and the 40s lurking in the 80s at the same time, you know?
Yeah.
It's that weird crossover. He loves you a lot. Yes, he does love you a lot, Bruce. Couldn't find my socks without him.
No, I bet you couldn't. I forgot what we were talking about before. Jack Nicholson.
We were talking about whatever you want to talk about.
Something or other.
Alcohol.
Everybody
and tobacco.
Alcohol. Two different buzzes.
Two different buzzes. One great podcast. Welcome to Beer with Geeks with no beer.
With no beer.
Oh boy. So Alfred is his family. It's true. Yeah, I love the tell me if you agree with this. You're the bigger Batman fan. I am more of a Batman casual compared to you. To get Batman right, you have to get Alfred right.
Wow, you know, I've never thought about it, but that is absolutely true.
If you get Alfred wrong, you're probably getting Batman wrong.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. If Alfred doesn't compliment Bruce Wayne, if they don't mesh together, because they are the real relationship.
That's
the
real
story.
Relationship.
That's like if Lois and Clark don't work.
The whole thing doesn't work.
The whole
work.
Thing falls apart. It doesn't work. And so
that's why as much as Lois and Clark, the TV series, was not like a great television show, it was a good Superman show because it got that right.
Because Terry Hatcher and Dean Cain had amazing chemistry.
They clicked.
And they were really good, Lois and Clark. So fun fact about this scene, this surgery. I have two fun facts.
Okay.
About this surgery scene. One, the tools on the table right there are the same tools used in the dentist scene from Little Shop of Horrors.
Oh, that's cool. And that was around was the movie after? Little Shop of Horrors might have been after this.
Little Shop of Horrors is after this. So they use those same tools.
So cool.
As a little Easter egg. Isn't that fun?
That's so fun.
I know.
One of the most fun facts I've ever heard about a movie.
I know. So there you go. Mirror. Second fun fact. In high school, I had to do a... I went to a Catholic high school.
Me too.
And the Ina. I've been there. I went to
your
if you recall.
I do.
And I didn't go there. And
you've been there, but you didn't go there.
Beautiful school, really. Would have loved it there. So, but you see why they have to work with you. So this scene, my friend of mine and my group, we replicated because we had to do a project on, narcissism.
Oh, okay.
And so we reused this scene and redid it to play out narcissism. It didn't work at all because
okay.
We were in high school and it was terrible and nobody in the class got it, but we enjoyed ourselves remaking it.
Well, good for you.
It was fun. Third fun fact about this scene with Kim Basinger and Michael Keaton on the stairs, he's standing on a box because they were about the same height.
Stop.
Yep.
Oh my God. I don't know why I'm so shocked by that, but like fun little Hollywood fact. Standing on a box making out with Kim Basinger.
Bruce is staring at me. Your cat is staring at me with my.
Thank you for clarifying which Bruce you're talking about.
He is like not.
Stop saying my name, Tim.
He is not having my fun fact.
So Bruce has a very my cat Bruce has a very judgmental stare. It often is off putting to me. It is often off putting to my wife. But that is our boy.
That's
our boy. One of our two boys. One of our two cats.
Bruce, look at me so I can take a picture of your pretty face.
He recognizes his name, honestly. If you say his
Bruce,
name enough, he will notice
Bruce,
it. He will...
Bruce. Bruce.
Well, apparently.
Bruce.
Not if you do it, but it happens.
He's not looking at me, but it's good enough.
This movie is so good, dude. And, like, it's so... It's like, honestly, and I don't mean this in a bad way, but it's so campy in a way, you know?
Oh, no. It's not campy.
It's not Adam West campy.
That's
to the
right.
same extent. But, this scene is campy. Right, like this is campy. This is kind of cheesy.
I like that Jack Palance takes his last drink as kind of like he takes it as like, oh, I got to reach for the gun, but also this is probably my last drink ever.
Yes, he knows. He knows.
You know what's funny? So in 1989, you can't see Jack Nicholson's face as the Joker.
I was going to say.
But in 4K, you know exactly what he looks like. So his movement into the light is completely wasted.
It's negated. Right?
Yeah, negated.
Because he's in shadow, and probably on the movie screen, you probably couldn't see it, but we can see
but
it.
But you can see everything.
We can see it just fine.
So it loses its effect. Also, you can see purple that they removed, actually, Oh, no, on his neck. See? Right side of his, left side
yep,
of his neck.
Yep, yep.
You can see purple from his collar rubbed off on the makeup. That's my other fun fact for you.
You have a lot of fun facts. Oh, Jack Palance.
I've seen this movie far too many times.
Many, many times.
To not have fun facts for you.
This is such, I mean, like, can you believe that in, I mean, in this day and age, in the year of our Lord, 2019, we are very used to a certain kind of comic book movie, right? And we are very used to a certain level of comic bookery, if you will. But
yes,
in 1989, in the 1900s, in the 20th century, for there to be Jack Nicholson, one of the all-time greats of Hollywood, to be playing a character like the Joker.
That's right.
Was a huge deal. And I can't, like, I'm sure many of our listeners remember that, but many of our listeners are also my age or younger, right? Young enough where this movie predates us.
That's right. Well, think about it. Kim Basinger this is one of her first roles, if not her first film role. Michael Keaton was mainly
Mr. Mom.
A comedic actor up until this point, Beetlejuice, Mr. Mom, things like this.
I mean, this was the original fan outrage, right? Remember,
letters and letters and letters and letters.
Remember the Gal Gadot outrage of, she's so skinny.
She's too skinny, blah, blah, blah.
It's like, this beautiful woman is too skinny to be Wonder Woman. Like, screw you.
Shut up. She's amazing.
Screw you. She's amazing.
Gotta watch that movie again. I haven't watched Wonder Woman in a long time.
I haven't either. I saw it a bunch of times. I saw it like 3 or 4 times in theaters, but I haven't seen it in a bit.
Yeah.
And I own it, so I'm ready to watch it whenever you want.
He's so creepy.
It's so creepy.
Jack Nicholson was so creepy in this movie. He actually did an interview where he said this is the one movie he can watch himself in because he doesn't recognize himself.
That's really cool.
Isn't that cool?
I really like that.
Yeah, I like that too. Well, he didn't want to do the part. They were going to give it to Robin Williams, and he was like, you know what? No, I'll do it, but I'll take a cut of the profits, which gave him like a $10 million bonus or something like that, just to watch, or like he took like 10% of the gross of the film. So he is still making money off of this movie 30 years later.
And isn't it that he owns a piece of the name Jack Napier, right?
So yes,
anytime DC publishes anything where the Joker's name is Jack Napier, which is not always the case, but whenever they do make reference to him being named Jack Napier, Nicholson makes a few bucks.
Yeah, that is absolutely right. Alfred just messing everything up. I'll see you when you get back. Oh, we're not going anywhere. Shut up, Alfred. What is the matter with you?
What's wrong with you?
He's so smiley, though. He's so cute.
He's screwing it all up.
Do you feel like Michael Goff could beat you up if he had to, though?
I mean, if he had to.
I think he could.
Yes. I feel like he could. Yes. If it came down to fisticuffs, he could. Yes.
You'll never believe what happened to me today.
I mean, she will, though, because she can see your face and she passed out.
Yeah, it wasn't today either. It was probably a few days ago.
The tie.
Oh, great tie.
I love his bow tie.
Yeah, it never comes back, this bow tie. It's really good.
Which is a shame.
Yeah, before Harley Quinn, this blonde, you know, blonde-haired sidekick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, and this boardroom.
The boardroom scene is great.
This is so, like, proto Tim Burton, right? Like, this is like early stage Tim Burton with the underlighting and the shadows and the pinstripe suits. Oh my god.
Actually Jack Nicholson in like a peach skin smile is in some ways creepier than the Joker.
No, it's absolutely creepier. In every way.
It's like, it is actually horrifying because it's like, it's Uncanny Valley Joker.
Yes, because the peach, the whatever makeup they have on him, that's supposed to be, it's supposed to be like his skin color makeup over the white that his face now is.
Yep.
Also, this guy in the pinstripe suit looks a little bit like what's his name from
Law and Order.
Oh, Jerry Orbach? No.
He's like Jerry Orbach.
No, I was thinking it looked more like what's the guy from
I don't know, Frank.
Yeah, I know.
I don't know.
From the guy who does the
old town tonight. Good Joker laugh. Good Jack Nicholson Joker laugh.
It is.
Right there.
It is. Thank you. Oh, the machine guns. The old-timey machine guns.
I know. That's what I love. Anton got a little hot under the collar. You're crazy.
Sacha Baron Cohen is the name I was thinking of.
Oh.
And I didn't even use a lookup for that. But that guy kind of looked like Sacha Baron Cohen.
I don't see it at all, but okay, I'll believe you. Right. Now, this is fun because it's his real skin, but it's paint on the handkerchief that he paints onto his forehead.
And that's like movie magic, right?
That's
like
movie magic, baby. Yeah.
It's subverting your expectations, but the makeup is on the handkerchief, so he's painting it onto himself.
And then you don't know if the white before the scene, if you don't know anything about the Joker, yeah, like that pops out of his suit and he's got to stuff it back in, the little handkerchief. But you don't know if that is his real face or if the white is real or not. It actually leaves you guessing until you see him put on the makeup. You My number one guy. I like that he just, even as the Joker, he only reflects what he knows.
Yeah, he's a mirror.
Yeah.
He's a mirror, but he's a mirror. He's a funhouse mirror.
The Bob the Goo. He's a funhouse mirror. The Joker.
He's a funhouse mirror. He reflects it back, but in a perverse way.
You know.
Right?
Yeah, I agree. You know what? As much as Heath Ledger is an amazing Joker, and don't get me wrong, Jack Nicholson as the Joker to me is more the Joker.
Jack Nicholson cannot be overlooked.
I don't think so. Heath Ledger is a particular type of Joker for the particular type of film that he's in, but Jack Nicholson is more a classical the Joker.
Yeah, I know what you mean. And do you remember, or am I the only one who remembers...
I'm sorry, one second. Keep that thought. Yes, there's something about him talking to a charred corpse.
Oh.
Like, you can't understate how insane he is. Jack Napier is oh my God, it is horrible in his own way. Okay, continue though. Yeah.
I was going to say, I will put a pin in that for a second, one more second, because you were saying that, you're right. It cannot be overstated how incredible a Joker he was. And if Mark Hamill had not come along 3-4 years after this,
1993,
4 years after this, if he hadn't come along 4 years after this, this is probably the definitive Joker that would have been my Joker now. When I read a comic that has a Joker in it, I hear Mark Hamill's voice.
As many of us do.
Many of our generation do. But if it hadn't happened, or if there had been a longer gap, even if there had been a longer gap, probably Jack Nicholson would have been the defining Joker of the entire generation.
Yeah, I completely agree with you.
But what I was going to say before was, I have this very distinct memory of Jack Nicholson... At some kind of movie premiere. I wish I could remember what the movie was, but he was at a movie premiere on the red carpet, and like Extra or Access Hollywood or one of those, you know, tabloid TV, celebrity TV type things, was following him around, and they were interviewing him on the day that Heath Ledger died, and it was the day the news broke that Heath Ledger had died, and he had already shot The Dark Knight, right? So I remember, like, it probably wasn't Mario Lopez yet, but it was whoever was hosting Extra or Access Hollywood or whatever, or Inside Edition or whatever celebrity show it was at the time, and they were interviewing Jack Nicholson on the red carpet and saying, like, oh, you know, what do you think of the idea that Heath Ledger is going to carry on your legacy and be the next Joker. And he was like, oh, you know, he's a great actor and this and that, and he's amazing and blah, blah. And, you know, they were sort of surprised, and they were like, you heard that he died today, right? Because they could tell from by his reaction that he wasn't reacting in the way they expected. And he was like, what? No, you're kidding. Like, he was in so much shock and disbelief, and it was crazy to see Jack Nicholson sort of having to react kind of unfairly, because this, you know, whoever it was put him on the spot a little bit, but him having to react to this, the fact that the person who was sort of carrying the torch, carrying the legacy of the Joker, had just died, and he was now being put on the spot and being asked to react to the fact that, that he had passed away so suddenly and so young. It was kind of a I will just always remember that interview, and always remember you know that sort of the impact that had. Because it really is like a carrying the torch. Also, this mime kind of looks like Nathan from the producers. Nathan
the producer?
Producers. Hakuna Matata. Nathan Jesus from Hollywood, from Broadway. How am I this is how rough
Nathan
I am,
Lane.
Guys. Nathan Lane, Jesus.
Oh, I thought you meant like film producer,
no,
not the
no,
show.
No,
the
no,
producers.
No, from the show
I'm
the producers.
Sorry, I was confused. Okay,
as
I'm
in
good
with
now.
Matthew Broderick. Nathan Lane of Mimes over there. Never mind. I should stop drinking bourbon, but I won't. Anyway, that's my story of Jack Nicholson.
No, I think you're right though. That was incredibly unfair to ask him.
To put him on the spot like that, yeah.
Yeah, but also, like, he recognized talent, and that's important.
He did, that's true. Mm-hmm. Oh, my God, look at this. This is so iconic, man.
I like
all
that he, like, he's the Joker, and he's, like, he's permanent the way that he is, but also he, like, makes himself up to be something even more grotesque.
Oh, yeah.
Hello, Vinny. It's your Uncle Bingo. Also a line I like to reference that nobody understands.
The quill in the neck. I mean, that is like the pencil in the eye, right? Like,
yes.
Right?
Yes, Frank. That is a great comparison.
That's what it is. That's what it is.
That's
like,
exactly what it is.
With the whole, like, making the pencil disappear thing
in
Dark Knight.
Right. And there's two things that I love about this whole thing. One, Bruce gets shot in the arm, doesn't flinch. Pretty great.
Just not even phased.
In complete disbelief that, you know, that this guy that he thought was dead is alive. He instantly recognizes him where nobody else does. Great detective. But also, this is one of the only times you see Bruce, besides Batman v Superman of all films, reflect on the death of his parents.
Mm, that's true. That is true.
He goes to visit the site in which they died. He goes to Crime Alley. And I'm really, 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 really still longing for Bruce to visit the grave of his parents in his Batman costume. Something that I would love to see in live action. I've never seen it, and that's what I'm really banking on. Batman, can somebody tell me what kind of a world we live in where a grown man dressed up as a bat gets all of my press? This town needs an enema.
I didn't
know what an enema was when I was a kid, but I agree.
Now you do.
They do need it.
that town does need one. That's for damn sure.
I have a glass of water. Alfred being
Alfred
great.
Just anticipating Bruce's needs.
Oh,
you know,
Goff
again,
was so
again,
good.
The real relationship of this
truly
saga.
Truly, this scene is great. I like that Alfred's like, you know, Vicky Vale. He's like, Alfred, why don't you marry her? It's not
like a true dad, right?
Like, yeah.
Like, why don't you marry? She's a nice girl. You should really marry her. You know, like such a like 40s, 50s dad.
We've been on one date, Dad. Calm down.
How far did you get on that date, Bruce? Never mind. None of your business, Dad.
I know, because I saw her in the morning. If not now, when? But I like Bruce's consideration here in this scene where he like actually listens to his stepdad,
his dad figure, yeah.
But Alfred also gets the seriousness of the situation right away. He never scoffs at it. You know, he says, Jack Napier's still alive. I need all the information. And he says, yes, absolutely. He is all business when he needs to be. He's great.
Alfred is everything to Bruce. He is everything that Bruce needs. She is great, isn't she? Like, yes, sir. He gets all of Bruce's needs and he fulfills Bruce's needs.
Yeah, absolutely. Also, her, I don't know what kind of newspaper pays the salary that has the apartment.
The giant loft apartment.
Oh, my God. Her apartment is amazing.
The same restaurant that pays Monica's salary she can afford the loft in Friends.
She sublets that apartment under the alias of her grandmother, who has rent control. I'll have you know, everyone makes a big deal about it.
I still don't buy it.
They actually explain it in the context of the show.
Still don't buy it.
Which you can watch on the forthcoming
Warner Brothers service, where you can probably watch this movie.
HBO Max. Also, his Rubik's Cube, the diamond Rubik's Cube, not the cube, shows you how crazy the Joker actually is, that he goes a step above and uses the cube Rubik's Cube. The diamond.
The Rubik's Diamond.
The Rubik's Diamond. Bob the Goon is just the best.
Bob the Goon is, and he's got a little Joker face on his lapel.
But he has comic book Joker.
Yes.
Which is even better.
Who is Joker? Is that Neil Adams Joker?
Presses. Who is that? It is Neil Adams Joker.
Okay.
Good call, Frank. That is exactly Neil Adams Joker.
I may not, this is going back a couple months, I may not recognize Frank Miller's signature, but I recognize a Neil Adams Joker when I see one.
Man, good for you, though. That is...
Did I just redeem myself from 2 months ago?
Oh, my God, you did.
Thank you.
Frank, I have a Hot Toys of...
Oh, I thought you were going to say... Okay, I thought you were going a different direction. Okay,
no,
never mind.
Not at all.
I have a hard-on for you noticing the Neil Adams Joker, and I was like, that's...
I moved away from the microphone for a second. That's too much. What a terrible podcaster I am. I like that they're in Axis Chemicals, but he, like, hides it with the drapery
yes.
and things like
well,
that.
Well, he's still a classy gentleman.
Oh, the tie is back! The bow tie!
The bow tie! It's back!
4K, you're so good!
Thank you, 4K.
You make me recognize things. Also, that guy's smiling face that we see in the establishing shot, it's all over the floor.
Oh, my
it's
goodness.
It's the same photo
oh my goodness.
Over and
yes,
over
yes,
and over
yes,
and over
it
again.
Is. Wow. Axis wow. Chemical Company.
Wow. I'm so glad I'm noticing these things.
Thank you, 4K.
Oh, my God. I just need a 4K TV so bad. My wife, if you're listening, our TV is just fine. It was mine. It was technically free because for you.
It'll make a great bedroom
I
TV.
I didn't know you when I bought it 10 years ago. But I think that it would make a great bedroom TV. We can donate our other one to people who don't have the ties back.
The tie!
To people who don't have one. We should really get a 4K TV. End of my pitch to my wife.
I can give you I can tell you we can get a really good deal on a 4K TV because this one is now cheaper than when I bought it. And yeah, I'd be happy to pass on that knowledge.
Wow.
Becky. Action news.
Candy Walker and Amanda Keeler. Amanda Keeler is horrifying.
Yep.
Well, Candy Walker.
Candy Walker's pretty scary,
is scary, but not as scary as Amanda Keeler.
Yeah, fair.
Wow, that is horrifying. Oh, my gosh. 80s news.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, Jack Nicholson, or the Joker, cutting up pictures of a scrapbook of dead people that he killed with gas. It cannot be. Like stated how crazy he is, and people forget how creepy his version of the Joker actually is if you stop to think about it. It's really horrifying.
It's
as iconic as Heath Ledger's Joker is, Jack Nicholson's Joker is truly, truly creepy.
I mean, I'm telling you, man, if it wasn't for the timing, if it had been longer before we got another Batman incarnation, right? If there had been, like, say, even 5 years before we got another Batman of any kind, Jack Nicholson would have gotten a lot more respect. But I think it burned very bright and very hot and very fast, and then it burned out.
Yes.
And then we got other Batmen, other Jokers, other, you know, but if it wasn't for that, if it had been a longer time where this was the definitive Joker, this would still be the Joker we were talking about primarily today.
Oh, my God. Look how creepy that is.
So creepy.
Oh, he's using stand-ups of dead women to make a commercial. Like, I just want to point that out to you.
It is depraved. It is disturbing. Like, it is extremely, extremely messed up. And it is extremely scary. And, like, by any standards, if this was a movie made today, it would be disturbing, right? And in 89, it was, and even with a Tim Burton sensibility, it was done maybe a little bit, again, a little bit on the campy side, intentionally.
Yes, there's a bit of intentional camp here because all Tim Burton's films are intentionally.
He looks
camp.
Like Shining. He looks like Shining Jack Nicholson there a little bit in those mugshots.
Oh yeah, he does. See, and that's what really like got people in the mood for this like Joker Jack Nicholson. But he was like in 1980, he was even skinny like the Joker should be. Like if this movie was made 9 years or before it came out, like that, like he would have been even better than he was now just by sheer look of it.
Cosmetic scare in Gotham.
Yeah. Anyway, I was going to say I have a hot toy of the Joker. You know, they're like incredibly detailed, stylized, you know, like exact face replicas of these actors playing these parts. And I have other hot toys that I kind of like rotate out. I can't bring myself to even put him in a box because he's so good and iconic. I have a Darth Vader one too. I can't, I just, it's like a Darth Vader. I can't put him away. He's just too good looking.
Too good.
Speaking of good looking, Billy Dee Williams.
Billy Dee Williams has a cigar like us. We're basically Billy Dee Williams right now with an E Pluribus Unum seal behind him because that's the seal of Gotham City. You know what's funny about in movies, whenever they're smoking a cigar, it's always like a full cigar because it's like just been lit and then they say action.
Good point.
You know, it's never like smoked down a little bit. It's always like a full cigar.
I have three fun facts.
Please share.
Three fun facts. Fun fact number one. This was the first movie I ever saw Billy Dee Williams in. It was not Star Wars. So technically for me, he will forever be Harvey Dent.
Nice.
Not Lando Calrissian. Number two. When I met Billy Dee Williams, you were there.
I was there.
You remember. I did not have him sign a photograph of Lando Calrissian. I had him sign a photograph of Harvey Dent.
You did. I remember that.
Because that is who he was. This is Jack Nicholson putting on makeup over his makeup.
Yep.
Talent. And Daddy's going to make some art, darling. Oh, my God. He's so creepy. He's so good. I love it. His fake nose and his fake chin. Anyway, who is that guy standing in the middle of Gotham? I want to know about that, man.
It's Vladimir Gotham.
Vladimir Gotham.
Well,
the Waynes and the Cobblepots founded Gotham City in, you know, comic book lore way after this.
Maybe it's Oswald Cobblepot the First.
I'm going to say that it is. And then that thing after the my third fun fact, Billy Dee Williams. Oh, my God. I forgot my third fun fact.
We met him. We saw him. We conquered. No, no, we did not. You had him sign his. I had him sign a Lando photo where he's like squishing the cape. You had him sign a Harvey Dent photo.
Cigars. I remember. So if you look at pictures of Winston Churchill with his cigars, you will also notice that they are also like elongated. They are not smoked cigars.
Yes.
Because Winston Churchill, who I love.
Me too.
Knew his image and knew that the cigars were part of his image, but he rarely smoked them in public. And so you will actually see all the photos of Winston Churchill are not smoked cigars. He carried unsmoked cigars in his pockets just for the photo op.
That's awesome.
Isn't that amazing? He was that self-aware.
Ugh. I love that the handwriting on the urgent sign is like a child's handwriting.
Oh, I'm glad that
and this too. Put this
you pointed
on right
it out
now.
Because I couldn't figure out how to describe what it was. I was going to say backwards R, whatever it was.
It's like a kindergartner wrote it.
Yeah. The hot toy Joker that I have actually comes with this face mask, which I love, even though he doesn't wield it or hold it himself.
Doesn't matter.
The gas is purple. Like, people, like, release purple gas. Like, Joker deliberately was like, let's colorize this crap. You know, let's
yep.
dye it.
Yep.
Got to make it purple.
It's got to be purple. It's got to be on brand.
Ugh, smashing into that cake. Ugh, waste
what
of
a
cake
waste
and
of
pasta.
Cake, man.
Yeah. What do you think about the Prince soundtrack in this film?
It's perfect for the time. It's
perfect. Perfect for 89. Dates it, but I also love it.
But also, you know,
I like the caked look that Jack Nicholson's makeup has right now. Like, there's enough forbearance that they didn't just use his regular skin tone.
They
actually caked makeup onto his face.
Yes.
Like a high school play.
And like I don't know a thing about makeup, but like non-shiny makeup, right? Like so that it would look like
matted.
Caked. Matted, yes. So but I love like that tool God chest that guy is carrying is like hot pink. Oh, I love
now,
it.
Now, again, go into the Anton First and the prop department and all in production design. All these paintings had to be recreated.
Yes.
Because some of them are famous paintings.
Oh, yeah.
So Joker was here. Some of them had to be recreated just for his goons to deface it.
Because these are like Monet, like these are references to
Caesar.
He turns Caesar into the Joker. Like, these are references to actual famous classic paintings, and he's just defacing them left and right. you know, and the sculptures and everything else. He is defacing like classic art, you know, like the heritage of society. And he's just throwing paint on it, which, like, what does that say about the Joker? Right?
I know. I think, honestly, this scene, I think, would even play better if there were more famous paintings, like if there was a Starry Night.
I agree. Or if things the like Mona Lisa. The you know, Mona like, Lisa. But I mean, like, the George Harrison, the Beatles Phantom, George Washington portrait, you know, like.
Yes, George Harrison. George Harrison.
I am too much a Beatles fan.
I love you so much. Thank You're such a great
Thank
human.
You. Bourbon is a harsh mistress. But I mean, like, he painted it, he put dollar signs over the George Washington portrait in the background, right? Like
the guy wearing the priest collar for no reason.
For no reason. For no good reason.
Dollar sign over George Washington, a little on point. I like that he likes the
it's on the nose, but it works.
The meat. I like that he likes the meat painting. Leave that be. All of this works. Know what doesn't work in the scene though? This is gonna be terrible. Kim Basinger's dress. What the hell is she wearing?
I mean, I can't even see her dress right now.
Is it a turtleneck? Is it a sweater? Is it a dress? I don't know.
It's a sweats.
It's a
sweater dress.
It's a sweats. Nah, that's good work.
Oh, man. I love that he lights the candles with a flamethrower a minute ago.
His hat is
point
too.
It doesn't work, but it works.
He clearly had a ball.
He was having fun with this role.
Well, I mean, that's the beauty of playing the villain. I saw an interview with a bunch of actors. I can't remember where it was from recently, but they said, like, oh, it's way more fun to play the villain. Like, playing the hero sucks because you're so, like, yeah, the good way is the best way and blah, blah, blah. And you can't really do anything with it apart from be the hero. Playing the villain is amazing.
I feel like
you have a range that you don't have playing the hero.
There are very few people who can actually comment on that, like Michael Keaton being one of them, right? Playing Batman and then playing the Vulture. But
sure.
there's actually relatively few people who can comment on that sort of authoritatively, where they have been both the star in terms of being the hero and then the star in terms of being the villain.
Not terribly villainous in his own way, but Chris Evans, Captain America.
Sure.
Also played, I can't remember his name, but
Johnny Storm.
No, I was going to say Scott.
I know, Scott Pilgrim. Yeah.
He plays the skateboarder guy, and yes. I can't remember his name.
I don't remember his name either, but I know who you're
talking
about.
And I won't look it up. I don't care enough.
That's
because
fine.
But Scott Pilgrim is an amazing film. We should do a commentary on that one day.
I would.
Oh, Scott Pilgrim is so good.
I would do a commentary on that. I would do a commentary on Shaun of the Dead. I would do a commentary on basically the whole Cornetto trilogy.
I would honestly be there with you, except that I know Hot Fuzz more than the other ones, but I would definitely commentate on those.
Can I tell you that Hot Fuzz might be my least favorite of the three?
I know. We've talked about this before, but Hot Fuzz is my favorite.
Shaun of the Dead is my absolute favorite, no doubt.
And then World's End.
And then World's End, and then Hot Fuzz. Hot Fuzz, I feel like I didn't get Hot Fuzz. And maybe it was just the I've only seen it once, admittedly.
See, and
so maybe it was the context in which I saw
And I didn't get Shaun of the Dead, but I think it was overhyped. And so I should really go back and watch them.
Okay.
I should really, really go back and watch them.
We should really go back and watch them.
I will change my mind
on Shaun of the Dead and maybe on Hot Fuzz, and maybe you will change your mind.
Do you want me to come
it.
Back into your life, into your home, and watch one of the Cornetto?
Yeah, what are you doing next week?
Films? Yeah, nothing.
Okay, cool. Yeah,
because I'm on vacation.
Yeah, I hate you.
Yeah.
Ah, help me. Oh, I'm melting.
Frank, the cigars were honestly one of the best ideas you've ever had in your entire life.
I got more. I got more.
That's so good. I love it. I haven't smoked a good cigar in so long.
You're welcome.
The
breaking glass. The breaking glass. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. It comes down with.
It's so good. And then you think he's going to shoot the Joker.
This is classic Batman.
But it turns off at a 90-degree angle, and he rescues the girl instead because that's what heroes do.
Dude. And the POV camera right there is great. This is classic Batman. This is like radio series Batman. And I said the word series, and my iPad woke up because I thought I said Siri. But this is, I'm not even kidding. It really woke up. But this is classic, like radio, like old school golden age Batman.
You're right. No, why? Because modern age Batman just kills the Joker right in front of him.
Right.
But this one, he rescues the girl like it's 1935 Captain Blood.
Now, what is your thought on this Batmobile?
Oh, it's the best Batmobile in the entire world.
Dude, it's the best Batmobile.
It's the best Batmobile.
It's the only Batmobile.
It's so impractical, but I don't care.
I don't care. Who cares about practicality?
Mythbusters did a thing about, like, turning a 90-degree corner with a grappling hook and how it doesn't work, but I don't care. No, why? Because this Batmobile is driving at 30 miles an hour inside a city with no traffic, and that's all that matters.
This is fun, and that's all that matters.
It's fun.
It's fun.
I like that Batman's just so high-tech in the Joker's. It's just an 80s car spray-painted.
Yes.
Like, oh, my God. It's just it's not a functional Batmobile.
It's not functional, but it's fun.
Christopher Nolan's Tumblr is functional.
Putting the fun in functional since 1989.
Putting the fun in Batmobile since 1989. None of those letters are in Batmobile.
Monarch Theater. The Monarch Theater. Oh, and there's the bulldozer. Oh. The Monarch Theater is a beautiful, beautiful thing. It's a beautiful thing. We all need one in every town. Every town has its like old...
It's Monarch Theater.
It's Monarch Theater.
I have one in my town. I mean, it's the town over from me, but I mean, I live all next right. to a major metropolitan area, so...
Yes, you do. Yeah, that's right.
It's good. Oh, his cape billows so well. And heresy? I don't know if it's heresy or not.
Okay.
I think the effects of the Batmobile armor, like covering up, work better in 1989 than they do in Batman Returns.
Oh, that's not heresy. That's true.
I think it's stop motion in 89, and I think it works better because it's computer generated in Batman Returns. It just doesn't look
really
as good.
As soon as Batman Returns, they were already working on, they were doing CG. It works better in 89, I think. I think so.
108, I think. Oh, I have that grappling gun. Oh, I wish it fired. I wouldn't use it because I'm afraid of heights, but still it's so
Do you remember
cool.
like 4 years ago where you and I went to a park in Somerville, Massachusetts, and we saw Batman Returns?
Yes. Yes.
I have seen that more recently than I have seen Batman 89.
Ugh, how much are you enjoying each one in comparison?
Oh, I'm enjoying this so much.
I think Batman 89 is a better film, but visually,
I agree with you.
I think Tim Burton is more confident in himself, so there's some things in Batman 89 that work better.
But I think that 89 is a better film.
Yeah.
I think Returns has some visuals that are better, but this is like noir, right? This is like a Batman noir.
This is like Mildred Pierce with Batman.
Yes.
It's just a fantastic
this
film.
Is a treat.
It is a treat.
I feel like
it.
I'm having dessert right now watching this movie, you know, right? Like it is a treat to watch. I'm enjoying the hell out of this movie right now. I'm almost swore right there, but I don't want to bleep myself, so
editing for you. So recently I saw online Joe Quiñones, is how you say his name? He did a mashup of Batman the Animated Series and Batman 89 in some designs. He did Batman, Robin, Joker, and Harley Quinn. His Batman design is a complete perfect mashup of Bruce Timm and Tim Burton or Anton Furst.
Bruce Tim Burton, if you will.
And it is just Bruce Tim Burton. And it's so pretty. And this movie, this guy's wielding swords. And there's no reason to question it whatsoever. But Batman,
why would you?
Oh, the scene. You know what? As much as the Dark Knight trilogy is amazing, the fight choreography in this film is better. Even though Batman couldn't move worth a damn, at least you see him move.
But they hit it well. They hit the fact that he couldn't move.
Yes, that's right. They hit it well, but they also hit well in this film.
Yes.
In a way that you can feel the choreography in the Christopher Nolan Dark Knight trilogy. Like, you can literally feel choreography happening. Like, them, like, thinking through the steps and everything like that. And I cannot feel that in this movie the same way. It feels organic. And that's the important part. Maybe because it's not overdone, it doesn't feel like it's just like, and my wrists are up here because that's where he's hitting me. And that's, I like Batman 1989 making a joke about, oh, girls, wait. Horrible. Horrible. Stab.
Not good. That's one of the few like not good things about this movie.
No, but you know what? This Batmobile driving scene, even though it's a little bit sped up through a set, Oh man, I have cigar ashes all over me. I look like I'm in terrible danger.
This looks like the forest that like Dorothy goes through. Oh, okay, and you're going with Duel of the Fates.
Oh.
But this looks like driving through all the trees in like Wizard of Oz on the way to the Emerald City, right? Like to me.
Yes. What about apples?
If we saw it at night, this is what that forest would look like.
But look how sped up this is. Look, watch the leaves. And he's driving, and woo! Leaves.
Oh, yeah, that is sped up, huh?
Yeah.
I never really noticed that before. Thank you, 4K.
Leaves!
Yep, there they go.
Yep, there they go, faster than what is humanly possible.
But it's so beautiful.
Oh, my God, look at it's so
so many beautiful. Glory shots.
Oh, this movie is so beautiful. And I mean, I love Batman, and you love Superman, whatever, but this movie is just how Tim Burton has just a way... just a way about him visually. I mean, it's probably because he's an animator.
And yeah.
I just dropped.
Yeah, no,
I just dropped ash on your floor.
That's okay. I don't care. It's fine. Yeah, no, it is. It is a. Oh, it's such a beautifully put together movie. Oh my goodness! What I mean, so many beautiful shots. So many beautiful, like every shot is like a gif. You know, every one is like a beautiful photograph. A piece of a work of art in itself.
What if Batman ever ends up in the Batcave drunk? He could die the way that he parks his Batmobile.
If Batman ended up in the Batcave the way we are right now, he'd be doomed. It'd be over.
Yeah, look at that. It's so close to the edge. That makes me uncomfortable.
Yep. Oh, and there's the bats.
I'm counting bats. One,
bats.
Two, three, four. Full disclosure, my wife works in wildlife and things like that, and she's running a bat program literally as we speak right now as we're watching this film, which is hilarious because we're watching Batman, but she is literally counting bats right now in the wildlife, and I am counting bats on screen.
I saw
four bats, including Batman.
I love the mirroring of that. I love that her real-life experience and our... fictional experience right
now. I love a couple things about all that. One, I love my wife. Two,
yes.
I love that we can make a connection with my life.
Yes.
With my wife. One, I love that we can make a connection with Batman and my wife and things so on and so forth.
I like love that it went to one and then two and then back to one. I love that.
Did I say one again?
You've had so much gin, you can only count to two.
Look.
Oh, I love everything about that. I love that. You can only count to two. Folks, this is real. This is happening.
Oh, great scene.
This is good podcasting right here.
This scene is so well lit. Batman's gonna turn around, and it's gonna be so good because it's gonna shine right in Michael Keaton's very, very exquisite and descriptive is not the right word. Expressionistic.
Expressive face.
Expressive eyes,
I would say. Yes. Okay, yes.
Like he... There's a, you know, a term in acting. It's called eye acting. You know,
yes,
how much
yes.
can you put across eye acting? And Michael Keaton is one of those people.
He had to, right? And this is, again, think about how many...
About how he groped her to get the film... out of her boobs.
True.
In this film.
Also think about how few sort of true comic book movies.
Alfred definitely put her back on her back.
Alfred just did do that.
Yep.
Alfred did do that.
Continue.
Think about how few sort of like true comic book films there had been at this point, right? Like how many iconic comic book films there had been at this point. Like Superman the movie and the whole Christopher Reeve franchise had basically happened by this time. And think about, there had not been much in terms of like serious, let's say respectable comic book film or like serious comic book film that had pivoted on a character that had a mask. And this is one of the few occasions where a character with a mask was sort of able to be taken seriously. Also, this poor action newscaster just getting more and more blistered and his face getting messed up as time goes on. You know, that's...
Well, it's because they can't use the hygiene products.
Right.
Which is, I mean, like, how many hygiene products was he using? Because he looks terrible. I love the Joker's costume in this film.
It's so good.
It's so good. I like the tails, like he's classy, but the plaid purple and teal pants, like he's ready to have a good time. It's like the 1989 version of the tuxedo shirt.
Yeah, sure.
Mm-hmm. I like the Batcave in this film very much. Batman Returns has a very good cave because it's kind of flat and functional.
Why
and
this was it one, different? It's the same Batman. Well,
but because Anton First had passed away.
Yeah, but that's not a reason. They could have kept it, right?
Well, I mean, like, look at the wood slats he painted black.
They could have kept it.
Very 80s.
That's very 80s. But that wide shot we saw a second ago, right, where it was, like, all rocky and stuff, right?
No, you're absolutely right. Popped collar, very 80s.
That is very 80s.
Even if it's his trench coat.
That's right.
Yeah.
All I'm saying is the size and scope of that Batcave could have been preserved into Batman Returns because it's the same franchise.
No, you're absolutely right.
But they didn't do that.
I agree with you, but this is the era where they're not so concerned about continuity that way. And
Tim Burton is not concerned about continuity. He's more concerned.
Absolutely not. He doesn't give a crap.
He's in the moment, right? This is like the Grand Central Terminal of apartments.
Wow. I know. You want to look up and see constellations.
Yes, you do. I mean, look at that steel beam above Michael Keaton's head. I mean, now you can't see it behind him, but...
What is that jackrabbit behind her, though?
Like
the cookie jar?
Who framed Roger the Jackrabbit?
Maybe she does love the Joker more than Batman.
Hey, maybe.
I give Bruce credit in this scene because, you know, he's been on a date with her, but he's a good of enough guy to be like, look, I've treated you poorly and... I really have to tell you why, you know, even though he tells her to shut up. But it's for a good reason, because he's really trying to tell her an important thing. And this scene kind of sets the precedence for every superhero film after this, including the most recent Spider-Man Far From Home, as to like, hey, this is the girl that I like, and I have to reveal myself to you.
I have to unmask myself.
I have to unmask myself, and I have to take off my coat to do it because you have very nice furniture, and I need to showcase it.
I need to take off my coat and show my 3-piece suit.
You know, okay, Frank. When was the 3-piece suit not in style?
Probably in the '90s is when it went sort of out of style as being not being the day to day. You know,
the day to day. It would still. But they're still prevalent because there are some movies, The American President, let's say, that has a three-piece suit in it. But I love the three-piece suit.
I love a three-piece suit. I love a three-piece suit. I absolutely do.
His suit is very 80s, but this movie's also, in its own way, existing out of time.
It is. We've said this many times already. It's 40s, it's 50s, it's kind of 40s, 50s, 80s. You know, it's living in three separate decades.
His suit has almost like an 80s kind of 50s cut, but his tie and his shirt are very 80s.
Yep. But
and his hair. It's a
but in the
80s
and 90s, wide ties were in, and he's wearing a wide. I mean, you can see
wide
not
wide ties were in the 50s as well.
That's
short,
true.
Wide ties.
That's true. Wide ties were in in the 50s as well. I mean, it kind of ties sort of get wider and then skinnier and then wider and then skinnier, and you can kind of just sort of watch them go wow. But like the Joker's wearing a wide tie too.
Yeah, he is. Nice tie, actually.
With a fat knot.
Velvety jacket. That scene where she opens the door and he kind of like exhales like, oh, I'm so relieved to see
you.
That's the kind of acting from Jack Nicholson that you might not get from every other actor.
That's right.
He's just so subtle in his overtness.
Tim, you know what scene this is?
Oh, my God. This is our favorite scene.
This is
the scene in which Jack Nicholson's dark hair is coming through his green dye.
This might be the scene. This might be the single most referenced scene in the entire 5-year history of Beer with Geeks. I think I may have made more references to this scene than you have.
I think you're right. Alicia, she threw herself out the window.
It's my favorite scene in the movie.
This is suicide, and we're just breezing over it because it's 1989 is what I'm talking about.
Yeah, man. Yeah. There's the dark hair. You see it coming through.
Yes, his high hair.
He had some black and green.
Is not great in this scene. I wonder if it was early in the shoot.
I wonder.
Because films are not filmed in sequence most of the time.
Of course. I wonder if... the boombox. I wonder if that's why. I wonder if that was intentional. It must be intentional, right?
Nespa? Oh, I love the scene. It's so weird, but I love it. I like that Bruce says most of the time. Like, he's self-aware, and he wants people to know so bad that he's leading this double life, but he just can't people know.
He can't tell.
Oh.
Does the Joker know at this point?
No. The Joker really never knows, and I think that's the point, because the Joker is so full of hubris that he's not interested in knowing. I think that's the important part about the Joker. The Joker is so smart that he could know if he wanted to at this point in 1989, and that he doesn't, but he's still wrapped up in himself. He doesn't care. Mm. And modern Joker does know, but doesn't care, because that ruins the relationship that he has with Batman.
Right.
Because it's the Joker and Batman, not Bruce Wayne and the person Joker was before the Joker.
Right.
So he only needs Batman. He doesn't need Bruce Wayne. He only wants the Joker.
Yeah.
And that's the dangerous and safe side of the Joker.
Okay.
That you never need to worry about your secret
identity
with the
Joker. Here we go. You want to get nuts?
Come on. Let's get nuts. Yes. Two iconic lines back to back. You ever dance with the devil in the pale moonlight?
What?
I always ask that of all my I just like the sound of it. You know, I like that in a PG-13 movie, though. It also very cleverly cuts away from Jack Nicholson's or the Joker's bullet of Bruce Wayne. And he does not question why there's no blood, because he's the Joker, I guess, in its own way. Or he's more interested in Vicki Vale, because it's Kim Basinger, and she's a very lovely human being who cares very muchly about humanity, I guess. There's a great Simpsons episode with Kim Basinger, you know, and all such things. Oh, Jack Nicholson, actually, this shot right here, my smile is just too deep. You know, or he farts on the way out. It's almost Wes Anderson in its delivery. Before Wes Anderson, of course, but it's framed with Joker's in the middle of the shot, in a doorway. And that's an incredibly Wes Anderson thing. Also, Bruce, you know, bulletproofing himself with a tin tray. Clever. Not sure if it would actually stop a bullet. But in its own way, very Bruce Wayne. But where does he go? Does he jump out the window? And he just hiding on the side? I'm not really sure. But we're back to Knox and Vicky. Which Knox we haven't seen in actually quite some time. So it's nice to see him again. But for unknown audiences, this is a really good scene.
Yeah.
This is a really, really good scene, because it actually gives us some backstory, which people are kind of like, oh, we know Batman's backstory. There's always somebody that doesn't know. And I'm going to tell a true story of I was teaching a class on the Bible once, on scripture, and I used Batman Begins to teach Sodom and Gomorrah, because Ra's al Ghul comes in and he's like, the city is full of sin and it needs to be cleansed and blah blah blah, and this is his thing in Batman Begins. It's really well done. It's really well done. And so this is, you know, but in that film you get a big backstory about Bruce's family. The vault with Batman's one costume, which he learns to kind of, you know, get more costumes as time goes on. But anyway, not important. I think I had the Batcave toy with this vault when I was a kid. Pretty sure. But anyway. Sodom and Gomorrah, and I remember one kid, so the Waynes get shot in Batman Begins, and a student in front of me goes, oh, that's why he's Batman. Because she had no idea. She had absolutely zero idea as to why he's Batman.
Wow.
Right, and we kind of take for granted comic book fans, those some of you, most of you who are
many
listening.
Of us.
Right. Everybody has to start somewhere, and I think that's important. So no matter how much you complain about Uncle Ben's death or the Wayne's death or any kind of death, I guess, somebody doesn't know. Somebody has to learn somewhere. So I'm sorry, if you're 45 and you've known for 30 years, somebody 30 years younger than you or 40 years younger than you might not know, and they have to learn somewhere, and chances are they're going to learn from a film and not from a comic book. So shut your face and let people learn, because that's how you let fandom grow and continue to get there.
And let them enjoy it too, you know?
Yeah.
Don't rob them of that joy.
Don't rob them of that joy, because somebody didn't rob you of that joy. Right. And that's why you're still a fan.
Right.
Also, what are these guys doing? Shoveling dirt into something? Nothing. Commence la festiva. Frank, you talk for a while.
Yes, sir. This is as you were telling the story, I saw Billy Dee, and it got me thinking about Billy Dee in 1980 versus Billy Dee in 1989. And then you were talking about how The Shining was 1980, and this is now Jack Nicholson 1989, and Billy Dee aged a lot better than Jack Nicholson in the 9 years. I gotta say,
wow, actually. I mean, we met Billy Dee Williams. He was on it. He looked great in real life.
Yeah.
Like, actually, he was really on it, because see, Bruce Wayne.
Yeah, my
with his
story.
Glasses, in his turtleneck, in his turtleneck and jeans.
Now, that look today wouldn't fly, but at the time, that was a contemporary look, and he looks good for the time.
He looks so good. You know what? And it wouldn't fly because of the type of jeans he's wearing, not even the turtleneck. It's the type of jeans he's wearing.
Well, the glasses are a little outdated too in the hairdo, but
they're also in.
But the
right
light wash jeans, you're right. The light wash jeans.
Yeah, but the glasses are in right now. But anyway, your Billy Dee Williams story.
Billy Dee. We met Billy Dee at Rhode Island Comic Con in like 2013, 14, something like that. And we met him. You got your Harvey Dent photo signed. I got my Lando photo signed. But when we met him, I made a point, one of my favorite things to do, but the curls and the glasses, man, that's not in style. You know, the little around the ear curls, that's not.
No, they're not, but they do make sure that when you look over the side of a boat, your glasses don't fall off.
That's true, yeah. You being a Jaws fan, you'd appreciate that.
Oh, man, I love Jaws so much.
You do? Oh, I knew this about you. No, but we met Billy Dee, and...
Wait, hold on.
Yes,
sorry.
Pause.
Sorry. You met Billy Dee, and we met Billy Dee, but I have to talk about this because it's been on my mind,
nope.
And I completely forgot until this Monarch Theater scene.
Go.
And since the 80s, Batman or Bruce Wayne saw the Mark of Zorro
yeah.
with his parents, and you know, before on the night that they were killed, right? The Mark of Zorro came out in 1940... Batman was released in 1939.
Okay.
So that doesn't actually match up.
Doesn't add up
at all to the original Batman origin. So original Batman origin, 1939, they were just walking home and the Waynes got killed. The Batman Mark of Zorro edition was not until the 80s, but it doesn't match up with the 39.
Well, it was added later because Zorro, Batman, you can see the connection there.
Oh,
right?
There's tons of connection.
Yes,
Grant Morrison connects
it
really well. If
absolutely.
You want to go back and watch that. I want to say this actor, the guy who plays Thomas Wayne, was actually in another comic book film, but I can't remember which.
I couldn't tell you.
I will look it up while you tell your Billy Williams story, but also this guy who plays young Jack Napier.
Ever dance with the devil in the
He aged really well. Can't remember his name. And
but this guy looks like he has the look of what Jack Nicholson would have looked like, you know,
he
30
looks,
years earlier.
Oh, my God. He looks just like him. But also the way, like, his dimples and his smile match the lines of the Joker perma smile.
It's perfect.
And even the
makeup has this sort of matte look, you know, for sort of stylistic effect.
Yeah. So anyway, continue.
My Billy Dee story. We met Billy Dee at Rhode Island Comic Con. We had a great time. But I love to, and if I meet someone whose work I admire, I prefer to, you know, I meet Billy Dee Williams. Everyone tells him that they love him as Lando. Many people tell him that they love him as Harvey Dent.
Me.
You. And many people. But I wanted to tell him just so he would get a kick out of it, just so he would feel appreciated.
I got it. Sorry. I will
go for it.
To you.
Go.
So in Superman, this is related to you, in Superman the movie, 1978, there's a burglar on the side of the building that's suction cupping his Spider-Man his way up the building.
Stop.
That is the guy, same actor who played
Thomas Wayne. I love it. I love it. I love it. I love everything about that. I love everything about that. That's amazing.
All right, continue with your story. Vicky Vale's in the Batcave. Alfred is a complete dick and lets her in without
permission.
Yeah,
Alfred should not be allowing that right now.
But he also knows what's best for Bruce because he's a dad.
Yes,
anyway.
But also not. But
continue.
We met Billy Dee and I got to tell him that I loved his jazz album, Let's Misbehave.
Oh my God, you've listened to that?
You've heard that? He was in disbelief that I had heard that album, that I even knew it existed. That someone, you know, in their mid-20s at the time could have possibly known it existed. And I was like, yeah, yeah, no. Not only did I know it existed, I've listened to the whole album, and I enjoyed the hell out of it. So you know, I wasn't lying. I'll never lie to somebody and pretend that I had consumed some piece of media that they've produced. But I will try to find maybe something a little more obscure they've done, and compliment them on that so that they don't get a compliment about something that they hear all the time.
And I have followed that rule ever since. I've got to go to work mixed with the Batman suiting up scene, which isn't really suiting up because it's impossible to suit up into what he's wearing.
Sure, 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 sure.
Ugh, so good. I followed that rule of thought. You said that you did that with John Schneider.
Yes. I told him that I love his movie Collier & Company, which he financed himself.
And he double handshook you.
He double handshook me. He gave me a second handshake because he was like, oh my God.
He was so happy.
You saw that?
I remember.
People love it when you compliment them on something that they're, maybe it's a little more of a personal project that they're more proud of, or something a little more obscure. Like they appreciate it because they've heard, Mark Hamill knows you love him as a Joker. He knows you love him as Luke Skywalker. He knows that.
But if you tell him you saw him in Amadeus on Broadway in the 80s,
he will probably double shake your hand. I have not met Mark Hamill, but there are a handful of things that I will probably tell
him. I have a version of that, your Billy Dee Williams story.
Go for it.
I saw the movie Breathe, directed by Andy Serkis, starring directed by Andy Serkis.
Ooh.
Starring Andrew Garfield and the woman who plays Queen Elizabeth II on The Crown, whose name I can't remember.
Oh,
for the life of me.
Claire Foy.
Claire Foy, thank you. I knew it was Claire, but I wanted to say Claire Danes, and I knew it wasn't right. Claire Foy, I met Andy Serkis and Elijah Wood and Sean Astin in the same day. Very overwhelming. Because they're wonderful people. We'll take a picture with them. I actually was present at the moment where Sean Astin and Andy Serkis reunited with one another.
Oh.
Which was very, because I hadn't seen each other since they filmed the Lord of the Rings. It was very touching.
That's awesome.
Also, when Batman turns around in that scene, when the Joker in the helicopter,
beautiful.
You can see his belt jump up and down, which is really funny.
Yeah.
I had seen the movie Breathe with that he had directed, and I said, oh, you know, your greatest Gollum and your greatest Caesar and your CG work is amazing, but, you know, Breathe was a wonderful film. And he was like, oh, you saw it. And he was so happy.
Yeah, man.
That I had seen his film. And I said, yeah, I saw it in an independent theater in this small little community, and it was wonderful experience. And he was, I think, slightly sad that I saw, because I saw it like sag a little bit when I saw it in this like little indie theater with a small community. He's like, oh, you didn't see it with a lot of people? That's sad. But he was so happy that I saw the film that was important to him.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think that's the key to meeting people. See the projects that they're invested in.
I think that reminds me of, you mentioned the day we met John Schneider. That same day, we met Brent Spiner.
Oh, my God, that's right.
Same day.
I told him that I had a cold, and he was upset with me.
Yeah, well, you told him that you knew him from 1776, and he was like, oh, what city did you see it in? And there was like a long pause, and you're like, well, I didn't see it. I know the soundtrack. And he was like, oh, okay. I mean, that's cool. That's I mean, that's, he was excited that you knew it, and then similar to when you told Andy Serkis that you saw it in a small theater, he was sort of like, well, you know, when you told Brent Spiner, like, I know the soundtrack, but I haven't actually, I never actually saw you in the show.
Right.
He was like, oh, that's okay.
So moral of the story, cool. Tell them that you see something, but don't give away too many details.
Yeah, or I mean, like, have it be something that you actually saw them in or heard them in, or, you know, like, have it be something you actually had a personal experience with, because they will follow up. They will ask follow-up questions, and you better have the goods to back it up, right?
That's right. I mean, I had the goods to back up Andy Serkis's per se, but I didn't have, but it, maybe he didn't love that it was a small theater because he wanted more people to experience
sure.
it, because Breathe is,
sure.
a, is a really good film.
Sure. And Brent Spiner wanted you to have seen him on the tour of 1776, and he wanted you to have, it was 1776, wasn't it?
Yes, it was.
Okay.
He was John Adams, and the soundtrack is amazing, but he, you know, was just too young to have seen the tour.
Sure.
I really wish I did see it, though, because that's the version that I, as good as William Daniels. Mr. Feeney, right, is good in 1776. He's great. I would have loved to have seen Brett Spiner, because that's the one that I gravitate towards. Again, to relate to Batman 89, I said before, Pat Hingle played Benjamin Franklin in that.
Ah, there you go. It all comes around. It all comes around.
It does.
So, oh, my God.
Winging bat flies through the night, finds me ready.
Beautiful.
Bob, mask. Oh man, this movie is so good.
This movie is so good, and it's a pretty movie.
Now,
like, the visuals are so
comes
good.
The part where I relieve you of the little people, of your burden, of your failed and useless lives. It's so terrible. I like to ask, my plastic surgeon always said, "If you got to go, go with a smile." We saw his plastic surgeon. He did not say that. Joker is a liar.
Yep. Well, I mean, he's a bad guy, so it's allowed.
No, but I mean, it gives weight to his character and his performance that he's a liar.
Agreed.
So what else is he lying about? Christopher Nolan shows us that Joker is a liar. Like, really shows us. He gives us different versions of the Joker's origin and everything like that.
I ever tell you how I got these scars.
Right, exactly. But Jack Nicholson's Joker is not overtly a liar. You have to look for it.
You have to intuit it.
Right, which is even worse, because that means he's a better liar.
Yes.
Because the audience isn't shown that he's a good liar like that. I like that that Knox has to, like, karate chop his trunk open.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It's not easy. It's earned.
Keeping a baseball bat in your trunk, though, not a terrible idea.
It's a good move.
I keep a baseball bat near the bed. You never know when you're going to get attacked. Really. Everyone should do it.
Couldn't hurt. Especially where you live, you know, that
keep
dangerous neighborhood where you live.
Keep a knife in your pocket.
He lives in a very safe neighborhood.
And a baseball bat by your bed. I live in a very safe neighborhood, but you never know. My brother was a police officer.
Better be prepared.
Some things, and I'm a Batman fan. Paranoid just comes with the territory.
Better to be prepared, you know?
Do you like, now, you're a Superman fan, so you love the powers Superman flies on
sure.
his own.
Sure.
How do you feel about the Batwing?
I love it. How could you not love that?
This Batwing is particularly good.
It's so cool.
Way better than the Bat of the Dark Knight.
I love the Dark Knight. I love how the Dark Knight Rises. I do. I love the Christopher Nolan trilogy. But this Batwing is badass. It's so cool.
Look at the amazingness of the miniatures in this film, where he, like, takes a turn and all that stuff. This is all a set and miniatures, and it's just so well filmed. That's the genius of Tim Burton.
This is old school movie magic. I say it a lot, but it's old school movie magic.
I mean,
miniatures, it's live action, it's everything put together. It's all happening in camera.
In camera makes a huge difference when watching a film, because, like, look at that. That's all in camera. In camera. When I was a kid, laughs.
Yeah.
Love buttons.
We're still kids.
I'll push any button. If I walked into, like, a nuclear reactor, like, don't push that button, I'm gonna be like, push.
Uh-oh. Homer Simpson.
Push.
But like the close-ups, right, are obviously, they must be like miniatures, right? The close-ups of the Batwing where you don't see Batman in it. But They're still using like original Star Wars type effects, where it's a miniature flying against a matte painting or flying against a blue screen or whatever. And, but it gives that same sense of realism, and it still gives that sense of I don't know what to call it other than movie magic. And it's what it is.
And I will say that we don't talk about this a lot in films, and because a good film won't call attention to it. But the sound effects in this movie...
The sound design is great.
The sound design is genius.
Now, okay.
The batwing sounds and everything like that is really... Like, Tony Daw's work is, like,
yeah.
truly
okay,
out,
Tony Daw.
Truly out.
So I was going to use a lookup and see if it was... one of my unlimited lookups, and see if it was Ben Burtt who did the sound design.
You would assume that it was. Oh,
you would
great
think.
Shot! Great shot coming up right here, where Batman is self-aware. He flies at the moon.
And there it is, the moon.
Fly back down.
So good.
Yeah, it's
if
good.
You were wondering if you were still in sync with us, if you're watching, now you know whether you are or not. Mm. Yeah.
Did you notice the subtitles on that just went, A-A-H-W, like even the movie is self-aware, like... Ah, that was a good shot.
So good.
Yeah.
So good. Okay. Yeah, so I was wondering, I was actually about to look up whether or not it was Ben Burtt who had done the sound design, because when a movie is this good and when it has this sort of ILM level of effects for the time, it makes me wonder if they did pull in a Ben Burtt or someone of that caliber. But there you go. You have the answers because you know all the trivia about this movie and you've seen it more times than you probably care to admit.
Frank, I've seen this movie so many times that I would even admit how many times I've seen it, but I couldn't even tally
it. You couldn't count. It's more than you can count.
There's just every shot in this film makes me happy. It fills me with glee. Even things that should make me mad, like, let's say, the machine gun Batwing lining up to kill the Joker and he somehow misses, because that's divine intervention. Because the Joker knows he'll miss. There's something really, really, truly wonderful about that. The shotgun handgun that the Joker has, like the cannon gun that shouldn't work,
yeah,
but
man.
It does. There's something so antiquated and comic book and lovely about this. It's perfect about this film in a way that a lot of movies, not even comic book movies, can't match up to the same way.
Yep.
There's a reason this movie, my God, that's a miniature shot right there with the cars and the flames.
Oh, no doubt. No doubt. Those are Hot Wheels.
Absolutely. But there's something about this film that hits on the gothic level that you don't get in other gothic films when there's CG involved, because you're immediately taken out of the film. But this one is able to wrap you in so inclusively that you're not interested in what's happening elsewhere in the world. It's just this film.
Yep.
Even if the story, some parts of the story are kind of weak or anything like that, the design and the characters keep you in.
Yes.
At all times. And part of that is the brilliance of the acting, because there's so much charisma pouring off the screen, whether it's in the sets like that bird's eye shot of the cathedral or in the actors. It's just so golden age Hollywood in its own way.
That shot of the cathedral looking up from a few seconds ago is beautiful, right? And it's obviously a miniature, but it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter because you can't replicate that in a computer in 2019.
Mm-mm.
You could only do it. Your eye can still tell the difference.
It can. I mean, you'd get close, right? It would be a beautiful shot today, but it wouldn't be quite the same. Wouldn't have the same impact.
No, it wouldn't. And even like Batman stumbling into the pews and things like that. It's almost indescribable. And I don't know. Oh, Joker shrinking his handgun. I mean, obviously, it's not, it doesn't work.
Sure.
But it doesn't matter. It's like a silencer on a gun in a James Bond movie. That's not how guns work.
It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. Like, what church looks like that? No church.
Not in the United States. Like, this looks like a Gothic cathedral in Europe, right? Like,
even then, it's so dark and depressing. Like, sure. It's not even what Europe looks like.
It looks like Notre Dame after the fire. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it
wow, that is so true, though.
Right?
It does look like Notre Dame after the
fire. We've seen the pictures of what it looked like after the fire, where there was, like, a little bit of light coming through. And this is what that looks like. And also that, what, they got up to the bell tower that fast? But anyway, it's not, you're right. It's not even a real, it doesn't even look like a real place that existed in 1989. But it doesn't matter. It's a beautiful... Oh, beautiful. And the fact that, like, Gothic in Gotham, I don't know. There's something about the goth.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. In the traditional sense of the word goth.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you said something that piqued my memory.
I say a lot of very iconic things, so you don't have to remind me of what I said.
It's something that piqued my memory. I wasn't sure if it was an exact quote from you, but... You know how babies are certain, like, some babies love smells, and some babies love to look at things, whatever. When I was a kid and transitioning, my nephew is the same way, which made me think of it, and transitioning into an adult, I'm a texture guy.
Okay.
I love to feel what things feel like. Tables, walls, whatever. I feel like Monk sometimes. You know how Monk I need
okay.
to like,
yep.
count
yep.
every column and things like that. I'm not OCD that way, but I need it. Like, I love to feel what things feel
you
like.
You love the texture. You love
I
feel.
Love
yeah.
feel. I love texture. And it's like, if you're not like that, you have a hard time describing what that is. But Tim Burton's Batman film, or most Tim Burton films, almost like visually let me feel the texture. In that and for, if you're not a texture person, you don't really know what that feels to know what that is like for a visual viewer. But I know what things feel like in a Tim Burton film, and that is so important in a visual medium to be a part of a world where you, if Batman is walking up a staircase, you know what that wood feels like, you know what that stone feels like, and that's the beauty of movies. Before the dawn of computers, I know what that feels like, even if it's a miniature. Like, that's a miniature right there, the
yep,
bird's eye view
upshot, yep.
of the cathedral. But I know what that feels like.
I totally. That's one of the most like amazing things about what movies and television, but really movies can do, is that movies only deal in two of the five senses. Sight and sound, right? That's mm-hmm. all they can give you, sight and sound. But a good movie will make you feel like you are feeling the touch and smelling the smells and maybe tasting the taste. They fill in the gaps of the other three senses that you can't get from a movie. A good movie will do that. And this is one of those movies. This is one of those movies that will give you that feeling of texture, of smell, of sights, of sounds, of all those things that a movie can only give you so much, technically and realistically. This movie fills in those gaps. A good movie fills in those gaps.
That's right. And, you know, honestly, if, I mean, doing Academy Rewind, you know, Palmer and I are on, at the time of release of this episode, we're on hiatus after season four. So we're almost halfway through the best picture noms of all time, going through decades and decades of films. Honestly, sight and texture are the things that get nominated more than anything else. That and how well you can yell at somebody and be realistic.
And how naked you get.
And how naked you get, depending on the era. But Batman 89... fills the criteria of, like, what, quote unquote, a best picture nom. If this was made in, say, like 1959,
it would have blown everyone's mind.
Best picture nomination right here, because it makes you feel something.
Yeah.
It makes you be part of a world that you weren't a part of before, that you never even considered to be part of your life. And that's, I think, in some ways, the genius of Tim Burton that makes him work so well.
I love that little reference to, like,
Beauty and the Beast.
Well, and Batman 66 with the pow. in the gun, or bam, or whatever it said. That is such a, like, you know, that is a much more, that's a Batman 66 reference that I'm here for, as opposed to the Schumacher days that were to come later.
Yeah. Why do they have ice skates in their boots, Frank, if they've never met Mr. Freeze before?
Doesn't matter.
Why?
Doesn't matter. Don't ask questions. Don't ask questions. Don't do that. Oh, this fight scene is, oh my goodness. Now, you are more of the fight choreography critic, where I am not. I don't know. I wouldn't know good fight choreography if it punched me in the face. But what is your read and what is your critique of the fight choreography here?
Old school choreography, pre-Matrix, Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, 2000, 1999, 2000.
Sure.
Is a more realistic fight choreography than anything that we really watch in films today. It's very choreographed. And it's the faster the cut around a fight, the more choreographed it is, because you don't want to show your hand. You don't want to show that people really aren't punching each other. But if you watch a fight in real life, if you Google like real fight or something like that in on YouTube, you're going to see how unsophisticated a fight really is.
Can I interrupt you for a second? Yeah, to say absolutely. That she is dancing with the devil in the pale moonlight. Anyway,
oh,
go
my
on.
God, she is dancing with the devil in the pale moonlight.
Go on.
And Batman's walking behind her, and she's like, I'm going to give the Joker a blowjob. And
is she, though?
But no, she's not. But because she's so smart, because she's Vicky Vale, she knows what's up. Yeah, that's what's up.
That's what's up. She's making him think that's where this is going, and he's like, oh, okay.
1989, boys think with their parts.
With their stuff, with their equipment. You say beautiful, such beautiful things. Oh. Yeah, it's true. But she is dancing with the devil in the pale moonlight.
Purple. She loves purple. Like, he's just like, oh, okay.
Okay.
I'm the insane, but okay.
Yes! Yes! Yeah, punch him in the face.
Punch him in the
face. Hit him with the bell.
I like that he, like, flicks him on the forehead, too, after he hits the bell. He's like, just so you know, flick like a bully. It wasn't easy to go for. And don't think that I didn't try. I know you did. Oh, they clearly had fun.
That's what I think I love about this movie, more than anything else, is that they made each other. Jack made... Jack Napier made Batman, and then Batman made Jack Napier into the Joker, or
you know,
so he thinks.
You know, that's funny, because that's actually something people don't really talk about in this film, that it's always that the Joker killed Batman's parents, and that's where it ends. But also, they made each other.
They made each other.
That makes them linked in a way that even modern comics don't make them linked.
Yes.
Because it's always Batman made the Joker.
Right.
Batman made his own worst enemy. Yeah, look, the Joker carries a pair of glasses with him. Like,
just for safekeeping.
You wouldn't hit a guy with glasses, would you? Would you? It's like I have a knife in my car just in case if I need to cut my seatbelt. You know, it's like
sure.
That, you know, that kind of preparedness. You know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah. I keep a Swiss Army knife in my pocket just in case.
Just in case you need to open a package, you need to cut your seatbelt.
Sure.
You need to cut out someone's spleen. Never know.
Yeah, yeah. But really, I love the sort of mirroring of how they made each other. And they made each other, you know, 30 years, 20 years apart, whatever it is. But I love that they are each other's origin story.
Oh, me too. The upper body strength of Batman and Vicky Vale in this scene is actually unbelievable, that she could just hang on.
By her fingertips.
For minutes and minutes and minutes at a time.
Like, I believe that Bruce could hang on.
Right.
More than I believe that she could hang on.
I have a problem getting out of bed, and I'm in my early 30s. I'm like,
sure.
Oh boy, my
sure.
back hurts a little bit, and they're hanging on from their fingertips. What cathedral is shaped like that?
I don't know what that was. The little the like airport control tower at the top of that
outcropping
of
a cathedral.
I don't know what that was, but all right, that's not gothic. But
you know what? It's time to retire. That's the line I'm waiting for from 30 years from now, where it's actually time to retire. And I'm just going to turn to whoever it is, hopefully 30 years younger than me, doesn't get the reference. You know,
it's time to retire. Sometimes I just kill myself.
Oh, that's what I'm waiting for. Now, here's the bad thing about this film. And I'll rarely say bad things about this film, even though I can recognize its faults. Tim Burton set a precedence for killing off comic book villains.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. Okay.
Richard Donner did not kill Lex Luthor.
Lester did not kill
villains in Superman 2. Although technically he did. They fell off into the fortress. They're probably dead.
They're dead.
You know what? But Joker is definitively dead in this film.
Yes, that's true. You know, we're talking 9 years after, 9 years after Superman 2, 9 years after Zod, Non, and Zor killed.
And I think Tim Burton set a precedence for killing comic book villains, and it's actually hurt the comic book subgenre.
Ooh, tell me more. It hurt the comic book subgenre. Tell me more. How did it hurt the genre?
As serious as Batman was taken in 1989, and in some ways as campy as it is now, but still glorious in the way that it's shot, I think that like Batman's arms would have ripped out of his sockets if he tried to catch himself and Kim Basinger at the same time in this shot. It doesn't work. You know, graphic look is great and all that, but you know, like realistically, like they would never stop like that, and
sure,
you know, they would die.
That would cause serious injury at best.
Uh-huh.
At best, yeah.
My point is that, like, if you think about comic book films that came after this, a lot of them have like killed off their comic book villains.
Yeah,
and not all of them. I mean, there are good exceptions. You know, like say, like the first Spider-Man film with Tobey Maguire, Green Goblin does die because that's what happens in the comics.
Yes.
But then Octopus dies, Venom dies after that.
Yep.
And then Daredevil, neither of them die, actually. Bullseye.
No, you're right.
Bullseye and Kingpin are alive. Hulk, the villain.
We're talking 2002, yep. Daredevil.
Magneto is alive. God, other Batman films, Two-Face dies.
So, there's Vladimir Gotham again. So you're
Penguin
saying...
Penguin dies.
Yep.
Catwoman doesn't die, but he thinks she's dead.
Yeah.
Meow.
My buddy Bruce... Bane is still staring at us. Bane dies. You're right. So you're saying this did a disservice in terms of... No, not a disservice, but it shows the... This is one of the few movies where you see the villain, no doubt, no contest, the villain is dead. Dead, D-E-D, dead.
D-E-D, dead. Which is actually a reference to Spawn, another comic book film. Did you know that? John Leguizamo played the villain Clown. That's where that comes from. D-E-D, dead.
D-E-D, dead.
Or it's what I reference anyway. He gave us the signal.
He gave us a signal.
Damn right he gave
us
the signal. Damn right he did.
That's a beautiful shot, right? Oh. The Gotham City Hall in the background.
Not how spotlights work, but doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter.
It's so good.
Who cares?
Her hair looks different in the scene. She has bangs. I don't think she has bangs the rest of the film, but I don't care.
Has anyone ever tried to actually create a real bat signal and shoot it up into the clouds, and what does it look like?
Probably, and it mostly looks like the Christopher Nolan film where, you know, Falcone is and begins as, like, he cuts the cloth to make it kind of ish look like a bat, and then Gordon gets the idea and he puts a real bat on the signal.
I thought champagne would be an order, ma'am.
Yeah.
He's got the bottle of bubbly there on ice.
Oh,
just
nice,
there you go.
Nice car, though, but in Alfred is like, you know what? I'm not in Britain, but I'm going to drive on the right side.
Yeah, right.
Just FYI, because I'm British. I'm not a bit surprised. Oh, I like that Batman Returns actually mentions Vicki Vale.
Yes.
It doesn't ignore her as, like, she couldn't reconcile with him being Batman and Bruce Wayne, so she, like, had to split it off for sanity. But it doesn't show her, but it's enough to make the viewer satisfied that their relationship didn't work because she's a sane person.
Yeah.
And Bruce Wayne in a lot of ways isn't.
In many ways.
But I also love the idea that Bruce Wayne loves being Batman.
Look at him looking at that bat signal.
Ugh, a very iconic shot. It's very well done. It's a great way to end the film.
A fantastic way.
You know, really, you know, co-starring Jerry Hall and Tracy Walter. Interesting way to end the film. Not directed by Tim Burton.
Yeah.
You know, right. Or anything like that. But
do you think there's a post-credit sequence? Should we stick around, do you think? What do you think?
I'm almost positive. And by almost positive, I mean 100% positive. There is not a post-credit sequence.
Do you think there's like a, oh, I wonder if like a penguin pops up from under the water. Like if this movie was made today, that's what would happen, right? There would be a post-credit sequence, like a tease of like the penguin being inspired by the Joker and Danny DeVito popping up under the water.
That is exactly what would happen today.
That's what would happen today.
And, you know, and in some ways,
I'm glad this movie wasn't made today.
As much as I love the post-credit sequence, because it's fun to stick around, this movie is very complete in itself.
It is. It stands alone.
It's a standalone.
That's one of the things that we don't get today. A standalone.
No, you know, true but not true. Honestly, the current DCEU, Wonder Woman, Shazam,
you're right.
Aquaman,
you're right.
They stand alone.
You're right.
They're very much in the vein of Batman 89. It's like, you don't need to see those other movies. They are of themselves. They may connect to a wider universe. Batman and Robin mentioned Superman, but you know what? It doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter. No, you're right. You're right. They are standalone films. DC is very good at making a movie, or Warner Brothers is very good at making a movie that stands alone, and maybe it has references to the other films in their universe and in their universe. I'll go with that. But you don't need to unless it's like, you know, BVS. Justice League, those require prior knowledge, but those are exceptions.
Yep.
And the rest of the, and this is me complimenting those films for the record. For the record, internet,
Frank is complimenting
those films.
That's you can tell he's drunk.
That is a positive. Yeah, I must be drunk because how old?
Two cigars and a few bourbons.
Yep.
Frank is complimenting
that'll
the
do
DCEU.
The trick. But really, like that. They are very good and very conscious of keeping the films separate and just saying, like, here is a standalone film about this character, these characters. Here's what you need.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Very interesting in the cast list right here that in the opening credits, Jack Nicholson is listed first because he's a bigger star.
Yes.
But in the credits, Michael Keaton is listed first as Batman.
Yep.
Which is. You know, telling because this movie is about Batman,
yes.
Despite people saying like, oh, the Joker gets more screen time, whatever else.
But in the opening,
I said that myself.
You're right. In the opening credits, Jack Nicholson is first, but here in the end credits, Michael Keaton is first.
Michael Keaton is first.
Almost said Michael Douglas, which would have been wrong.
Michael Douglas would have been a great Bruce Wayne in Batman.
He could have done it.
He would have been, especially late 80s Michael Douglas.
He could have done it.
He would have been a fantastic. What a good Batman he would have been. Not so much for some other heroes. You know what he would have been? He would have been great Hal Jordan.
Oh my God. If they had made a Green Lantern movie in like 1990, like a follow-up to this, would have been fantastic. Ooh, Pinewood Studios.
He would have been a great Hal Jordan. Would have been terrible. Like,
those were very short credits because there was
visually terrible, but yes, man, what yes. That would have been. Man, that was a short credit.
Short credits because 1989, no CG, right? Not like 150. Oh my God, that was such short credits. Wow, it's over. It is over.
You know what? And Tim Burton went from here to direct Edward Scissorhands, one of his best films.
Which we talked about not long ago.
Which we had not too long ago. And what, late 80s to early 90s, what an incredible time it was for Tim Burton.
What a time to be alive, which we both were.
We were both alive.
Yes, in my case, just barely, but yes.
But you know, we were both alive.
I was 6 months old when this movie came out. Five months old, but
the movie's over, so we won't take up too much people's time. But
sure.
I am so glad that we watched this movie.
I'm so glad we did this. We talked about this a long time ago, and I'm so glad that we finally sat down and did this. 30 years of Batman 89. And you know what? This movie still holds up, man.
You know, Frank, and I'm drunk enough that the short description on your TV of what Batman is about is kind of blurry.
Michael Keaton stars as the nocturnal crime fighter.
Nocturnal.
Jack Nicholson is the Joker, and Kim Basinger is Vicky Vale, the beautiful photojournalist with a passion for Batman's alter ego. That is the worst description of this film that I could possibly have written. I could not write a worse description of this movie if I tried.
It's actually truly terrible. Michael Keaton stars as the nocturnal crime fighter. What?
This is the worst description of this film that I could have hoped for. Thank you, Amazon Prime.
You know what? But we're out of here. Be with Geeks at Facebook, Gmail, and Twitter. And you can rate and review us on iTunes and find us all the places podcasts can be found. ThoughtBubbleAudio.com to check out other Thought Bubble Audio shows.
Yes, sir.
And Patreon.com/ThoughtBubbleAudio to support the show. Frank, it was a really wonderful time to talk to you in.
Yes, sir.
It was a wonderful time to talk to you in real time.
Yes.
In person.
In person.
With drinks.
With drinks.
On our 5th anniversary. So to that, I say
cheers.